Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon, as we have been every single Monday morning. Well, into our 11th season and off the back of round one of the European Champions Cup and Challenge Cup. But to those clubs, you're probably not going to get much of a mention today. So just be better, I think, is the message.
Well, Newcastle played and lost.
They did. They nearly won.
Did they nearly win?
Against Montpellier, who won, having lost for eight games as well. Anyway, that's not where I want to... That's not the game that deserves to kick off this podcast, as entertaining as it may well have been. How are you doing, JB? You all right?
I'm very well, thank you.
Been buying and selling sofas most of the week.
Yeah, sofa trading. Big sofa trader. Yeah. So I tried to get rid of one in the lounge, and Red Cross showed up, and they wouldn't take it. So never donating to them ever again.
And you don't want to do the whole Facebook Marketplace thing? Hive of scum and villainy. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Maybe. If you want a sofa, come around my house and take it. I'll give it you.
It's quite nice. And Phil, you all right? Any sofas traded?
Zero this week. It's a lean week in the sofa trading game for me.
But just a very, very brief update. How's your parquet floor?
Looking good.
Is it been finished for ages now?
It has not been finished for ages. So the parquet floor has been finished for about 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Because of a sequencing issue, which I won't go into. Very, very, very boring. But I did, excitingly...
You find it interesting.
Even I find it boring. So I won't put you through it.
If you want a building job to go wrong, get a construction professional to run it.
100%.
It's the only way you do it.
I deal more with money than time. So the money's fine. The money's on point. The time is a problem.
Ooh, well, same thing, apparently.
Well, yes. But I was installing the last two of the electric blinds for my Veluxes this morning and getting my ensuite. Which is adjacent to the parquet, ready.
Oh, so it's wonderful.
It's nearly. I will by hook or by crook be sleeping in my loft at Christmas.
Oh, what wonderful stuff!
So let's get straight on to rugby.
Yeah, I was going to say you can get in touch with us. Contact edchasers@gmail.com. And why don't I start with this email that's just landed? The last email in our inbox in the last few minutes from Jack Penrose, who said, "Love the pod, blah." JB is right much of the time, but not this weekend. 7 out of 8 English teams in the Premiership won their opening round in the Champions Cup.
Yes.
And he summarises the English teams, summarising them as, Bath are back, until they go to Toulouse, that is. The JB Bowl was won by his former love Sale over his potential love Stade Francais. Mm-hmm. Baxter has been Ferguson-esque in his regeneration of Chiefs. Marcus Smith is quite good at rugby. Sarries were totally outplayed. Billy rivals Tom Daly for diving headfirst into trouble. Can Saints win with their kids? The drop goal is back. Well, for Marcus Smith and Callum Sheedy anyway. And Pollard was worth every penny. But Bassett might be the best Wasps cast-off out there. What a great summary.
Let's go home.
Thank you very much, Jack. He finishes it off saying, keep going, boys. Sorry to Phil for his beloved Ulster losing their way in the second half. This is from Jack, a long-suffering Bath fan. And he says, sorry to Tim for Averon Bayonne suffering a draw. They look good in their kit, though. The kit is good, and I'm all right with the draw. It's okay.
Away to Munster.
Away to Munster. Yeah, that's decent.
Not too bad.
Well, I think you've missed a game. Peterborough Lions versus Spalding played this week.
Wow.
Yeah. And would you care to guess the score?
Peterborough Lions against Spalding. I'm going to go a heavy Spalding victory.
Heavy Spalding victory.
I'm going to go a classic 3-0.
3-0. Okay, so this was published on 9th of December, so yesterday, by Alan Swan, and it is in the Peterborough Telegraph. So this is how the game went down. Lions led the Counties 1 Midland East match 8-7 when the fracas between members of both sides led to a coming together of most players on the pitch. An eyewitness at the game told the PT a couple of punches were thrown, but when other players arrived at the scene, the team separated quickly. He was astonished when the referee abandoned the match, whilst apparently declaring he had sent all 30 players off.
All 30?
All 30. An eyewitness said, "I thought he was issuing two yellow cards. It was ridiculous."
What?
What a game.
It all calmed down pretty quickly.
Did the ref have somewhere that he needed to be?
The Peterborough Telegraph contacted Lions chairman Andy Moore on Saturday night, who expressed his surprise at the referee's decision. "No one could believe it," Moore insisted. We couldn't. The Spalding players and officials couldn't, and nor could some very experienced old players and officials in the crowd. Incredible stuff.
Wow.
Scenes.
We will now wait to see what the referee's report brings. That's what I'm talking about.
Wow. So, I just remembered, in terms of grudge matches, we said this on the podcast ages ago. Tell us about the grudge matches that are happening. Phil or someone, can you look up Canvey Island versus Basildon? Scott Sullivan got in touch to say big local derby with a lot of history in Essex South. That's level 8.
Essex South? I've not spoken about Essex South
level
in a long
8,
time.
No. He said big wins over Barking, 100 plus points, and Millwall, 82-5. No doubt Canvey will want to burst out the bubble of Basildon, which is clearly Scott's team, after our close win against them earlier in the season. So they're just 10 miles apart, quite pally off the pitch, but very spicy when it comes to a derby match. He says, spare a thought for Barking, who not so long ago were high flyers in National 1. I've played against Barking in National 1 a couple of times. They're now a level 8 club, and I've had to concede a few games this season due to not being able to field a team. That's Jason Leonard's old club, that.
Well, old Wimbledonians against old Ampleforthians yesterday in Surrey's Counties 2, level 8, won 28-20. So that's another...
What was Canvey v Basildon?
I've got 22-15, but that's from the 10th of October this year.
Maybe it didn't happen there. Maybe the game was called off or hasn't been updated on the RFU site yet.
Quite a few games were called off yesterday.
Yeah.
Because of the wind and rain. And we'll talk about podcast favourites, Tok H, Marlowe, and of course, Aylesbury later.
Nice.
Was that a gong?
You punctuated it by gonging your microphone. Didsbury Tok H. I can't do it again. Do it again. Didsbury Tok H. All right then. So where do you think we should start, JB?
Northampton.
Oh yeah, we didn't mention Saints in that.
We sort of did. They said, can they win with kids?
Yes.
And Courtney and the boys. Crikey, they might be able to.
Courtney and the kids, good name for a band.
Yeah, it's a very good name. So hang on, let's just take a bit more of a broader view, like what actually happened this weekend. So first question is, is this legitimate? Like, were the Premiership teams just really, really good? Or was somebody else at play? Were the French teams not at full strength? Is it a product of maybe there's so many teams that go through to the next round anyway that it's not that, you know, it's a competition that a lot of teams won't be taking that serious in the
World Cup hangovers going on? I don't know. Yeah. But that would affect England as much as anyone, though.
Absolutely.
The English teams.
Yeah.
So what is it that's caused this? It could also be a product, ironically, of smaller Premiership squads because they can't rotate. I mean, you just can't. You've not got enough manpower to do so in a respectable manner.
They also only have 10 teams in their league, so they have fewer weekends of league matches, so they don't have to rotate.
Yeah, Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a few things.
What do you reckon, Phil, on this whole... Because, again, we've, I think, rightly been saying the quality of the Premiership has dipped, but you... I don't know if we might have to eat our words on that.
I'd hold judgment on that till the end of the season, till the knockout stages. Because I think you've listed a lot of things of which all have contributing factors, JB. Hmm. It's how much each one of them has. So let's go through a few of them. Fewer teams in the Premiership, so they can... they have to rotate less because instead of playing, including Champions Cup games, 30 games a season, you're only going to be playing closer to 22, 24, 26. You've also got three teams that no longer exist and the majority of those players spread amongst the other Premiership clubs.
That's a great point.
Like guys like Bassett, Cunningham South.
That's a great point.
Ollie Lawrence, Ted Hill, although he wasn't playing this week. But the best players from other teams have either gone into play or back up to strengthen those teams.
So London Irish fans, Worcester fans... and Wasp fans, sorry, but your club's going... What Phil is saying there is that your team's going bust is the best thing for English rugby. So that's what Phil's just said.
Well, yeah, it has made other teams stronger.
It has.
Yes, like,
it has.
If you've got Ollie Lawrence and Alfie Barbary in your back Bath line, then it makes your team stronger, unquestionably.
It hasn't been good for those same players' bank balances, that's for certain.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but then there is also the fact that four out of six, so we're now... let me get this straight. We've got six pools of... Is it six pools? No, four pools of six.
Four pools of
six. Sorry, not six pools of four. Four pools of six. And the top four in every pool goes through to the round of 16.
What have they done to it?
The round of 16, it was very entertaining. But it means you don't really... Like, you only need to win a couple of games.
Well, Ulster got through last year with one win.
Yeah.
In the pool stages. They got through to the round of
16. What is the point in that?
And the year before, I think, they topped the pool, but played against Toulouse and got knocked out by Toulouse because Toulouse have been playing badly.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if you're Toulouse because you've got to beat everyone to win the thing anyway. Yeah. And Toulouse can beat anyone, so it doesn't matter if they're the lowest ranking seed.
You probably want the biggest games to fill up your stadium anyway.
There is a little bit of that as well.
I mean, it will be. It will be great come the round of 16. It should be.
The pool stages should be great.
The pool stages should be great.
The pool stages used to be absolute dynamite.
Yeah, when you think back to the Sky Sports era of the Champions Cup was just gold, wasn't it?
It really was, and you could see it developing as a competition which actually got in the popular conscience. Now it's not, but it was a real top end. Like
as close as you could get to international rugby in club shirts. And it was the great games, Leinster v Northampton in 11 and Munster winning it in 2009. Just those great Toulouse teams are just... They have messed about with it. I think it's sacrilege to have messed about with it as much as they have.
I completely agree. Now, just on the squads, I have got some numbers for you, which are quite interesting. About the declared players from each, not each team, but some of the teams that are in the Champions Cup. So Sale, this is unbelievable, have declared 63 eligible players for the Champions Cup. 63!
That doesn't sound like a smaller squad size compared to previous, which is what you would think if the salary cap... Well, not if. Well, because the salary cap has gone down.
It gets better. Saracens, 65. Mm-hmm. Harlequins over 70. That is bloody enormous. So it got me thinking, like, what's going on here with these numbers? And I came to the conclusion that these teams are not busy hoarding players, you know, like Bristol or Exeter did when they came up, because you need two squads effectively. You've got your Championship squad, you need to sort of wash through that. And those two squads were massive for that exact reason. And they hoarded a lot of players. It's not that. Here's what I think is going on. I think that the standard of the Premiership is going down. And as it is going down, it means that they're going to rely on more academy kids, which is why the most frequently paid salary in the Premiership is 40-something K, as we've discussed many times before. But because you're relying on academy kids to fill that void, effectively what they've done with the Premiership is they've made rugby a lot more accessible to a lot more players. So the majority of those guys there will basically just be kids. They'll be senior academy kids. And that's what they're playing with. Because if the Premiership is not of the standard it once was, these guys can play. But you wouldn't dream of playing half those guys if you were the Toulouse first team.
Well, Ben Richards on the email here sent about an hour and a half ago, contact headchasers@gmail.com. He makes the point that Phil just made and said he's actually quite positive and optimistic for the Premiership with the higher quality talent pool condensed into fewer English teams.
Yes, but we must remember that these are sort of marriages of convenience for the short term. Mm. So players that needed jobs right now and are willing to go for a cut price.
Yeah, but the salary cap's going up next year.
The salary cap will go up, but then where's that going to be spent?
It's already being spent. Bath being linked with, although Henry Arundel's not going to Bath, it doesn't look like, Bath being linked with RG Snaiman. And like the clubs that want to spend more money are already starting to spend that extra £1.5 million.
So,
which is going to leave Newcastle even further adrift.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's going to exacerbate a lot of problems. But nevertheless, the other thing I thought I'd mention as well is I do think it's undeniable that the playing talent in the Premiership is not as good as it was. That's just undeniable. But when you restrict the amount of players you can have, but you've still got money to spend, or you still want to spend money, so you want to be competitive.
Oh, hold on, just go back a sentence. What did you say? The quality of players in the Premiership has
declined, yeah.
Well, yeah, no, but I think Phil's point is the absolutely pertinent one. There are some players that have gone.
Yeah.
But the net actually might be a positive when it's only spread across 10 teams.
I see what you're saying.
I don't know if it is a net positive.
I don't know.
I think the Premiership overall is weaker. But it's not. My point is, I guess, it's not all bad because you have got players who've gone out, both as well as the England players, like your Marchants and your Noel, or like Marchant, like Jack Noel, like Sam Simmons, Joe Simmons, all those guys. You've also got guys like Vincent Cock who would be playing there, or Willy LaRue who's now in,
or Will Skelton,
Yeah, so there is definitely a drain in talent, which is a negative. There is a redistribution of talent, which is a positive.
Yeah.
Probably the negative outweighs the positive at this moment in time.
Yeah.
Whether that gets corrected when the salary cap goes up, who knows?
Well, there is one more positive, right? If you can't just buy players to win your titles, like Leinster can, you do express things in different ways. And one of the ways is coaching. So I think the two real bright spots in English rugby, A, the quality of the referees, who are just world-leading, which doesn't really help you win any games. They're not Romanian, after all.
It doesn't, because you never have an English ref when you're English.
The referees are delighted that both they're really good and England have been shit.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just as well we've got some really great refs because they can now ref in finals. The other element is coaching. I think English coaching is absolutely top draw. And I think the way that the Premiership coaching structures are put together is probably world leading because that's the only place you can really spend the money. And when everyone has spent up their salary cap, like most teams have this year, you need a point of difference. And it's almost always in coaching.
Yeah, I agree with that. Although I will just, because I know we'll be getting some angry emails from Leinster fans. Leinster only buy very specific positional players. Because they can't, because the IRFU limits them.
Yes.
So they do create a lot of talent.
I wonder what the wage bill is. Do you think it's world-leading?
It will probably... Well, if they were on the open market, if those players could sign for anyone, that would be just about the most expensive squad in Europe.
Yeah, and one thing you have to factor in, because you're not getting the open market value for them.
Yeah, Leinster are not paying open market value.
They're not paying open market value, so the actual amount they pay may be lower. However, the incredible tax breaks that their players get, like the eye-watering government support that Leinster and other Irish provinces get,
I love to see
is absolutely mind-boggling.
What creates some good rugby?
What is it? Something like an average of your top 10 seasons of play you get as one tax-free lump sum?
It's ridiculous. Like,
I don't actually know.
I don't know what it is. I think basically when he retired, Johnny Sexton got something like £500,000, maybe more. Just tax-free.
Yeah. So there are some... look, governments around the world do this, and it always makes me laugh when you hear politicians say something like, we must support...
State-funded rugby.
Yeah, it's even more perverse than that. It's like, we must support the valuable UK children's animated TV industry with tax breaks. I'm like, why? Why? So it's a favourite ploy of all politicians around the world. Well, in fact, say, I would happily give...
It's not just state-sponsored rugby. They've got state-sponsored tech in Dublin, haven't they? It's the HQ for Apple and...
Well, they've got some very delicious corporation tax rates.
They do.
Everyone should be doing, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone should be doing that.
Fine. Go for it.
I'd be up for tax breaks for rugby players in the UK. And indeed for everyone. So there you go.
Yes.
I'm with you there.
And JV, if someone did get an enormous tax break and they had some additional disposable income, where would they go?
Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't like to blow my own trumpet, but I'd probably say Beardmore & Co, independent financial advisors. That'd be a great place for you to visit.
Got an email here from this. I think this will move us on to one game we should have a talk about. The last game that we've seen. Guillaume Cochin. Contact headchasers@gmail.com. Says, hi, great, JB, always right, blah. I'll leave the rugby chat to you boys as you hit all the key discussion points. We'll try to. But something I couldn't resist a message about was the kits. So this is a stash.
Yes, well said, well said.
Now, I can get on board with European kits, says Guillaume, and I understand the commercial side of it. However, watching Harlequins versus Racing 92 in white and black, respectively, was a travesty. Two of the most iconic kits in club rugby. And then let's not talk. Let's not talk about Bath. But I think that's the other one I would say is Bath not being in black, white, and blue hoops.
Exactly.
Yeah.
An outrage.
And an Ulster. That should have been the two classic kits.
It should have been.
But it was red and yellow. If you switch it on, no one knows who those two.
Yeah.
If you want to have a novelty kit, have it for your away games or. Yes.
Well, do you know who didn't let
Premiership
anyone
Cup
down?
Or I don't know.
Sale, Stade Francais, basically played in their kits.
Yeah.
Which is exactly as it should be.
Yeah.
Exactly as it should be. So that's a spot on email because I was going mad about the Bath kits.
It's only a little thing, but it does speak to what's important.
Yes.
We're just talking about the memories we have of the Champions Cup through the 2000s. We would go out for a day drinking to go and watch Champions Cup final.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if people do that anymore, even rugby fans.
No, probably not.
Yeah, it's a good point, that.
I remember going out for a proper knees up at the bar just across from here.
Yeah, yeah.
We had a whole day on the beers.
That was Premiership final, wasn't it?
That was Bath Saracens.
Yeah. Harlequins.
No, it was Bath Saracens.
Maybe it says more
was
about
it.
Yeah, it was Bath Saracens. I don't know what year that was, 2006.
I just remember George Ford getting points against Harlequins.
2010.
Bath Saracens. 2015, wasn't it?
2015. It was after we started the podcast, but yeah.
Crikey.
Yeah.
But that, it maybe says more about us, that we get fewer opportunities.
Yeah, that's probably true.
This time of life to...
That's probably true.
To go out.
But I hope that 20-somethings are going out all day on the beers.
No, they're absolutely not. They're absolutely not. They're not doing that.
I don't think they are.
They've changed. They've very much changed. So, there was another email that came in, and it had a little whinge about Northampton, because we spoke about Northampton after they beat Saracens. We didn't really say anything about them. I mentioned a bit of equity and diversity training, which people have been forced to go through. And we just said George Furbank played well. And it was absolutely right. We didn't mention anything about Northampton. So they've beaten Saracens, and then they won their opening European game.
Away, and I think this, at Glasgow.
Yeah, I think this is worth talking about.
Yeah, go on.
So I love the way that they play. I don't know how sustainable it is, but their backs are absolutely dynamite. Mm. I was watching them go, so I had two thoughts about this. First thought was, I think they've got a potentially unsuccessful signing in Tom Pearson, and I can't really work out why. So when I've seen Tom Pearson play for Northampton so far, he hasn't really made the impact that I was hoping for. He's not the Tom Pearson that left London Irish, that's for sure. And I wondered if it's because, rather than wanting ball carriers, and I've always assumed that they did want ball carriers, they actually need forwards who are very fast to the breakdown. And those are different sort of beasts. So Tom Pearson was on the bench this week, and they went fine. And not only did they go fine, the carrying was quite good, but I thought the work around the breakdown to release the ball was excellent. And then when it gets the backs, I tell you what, this Hendy guy can really play. Really play.
And he is an unusual runner as well.
Yeah.
He has got a very unique gait, but he can run. He's a deceptive runner and deceptive change of direction.
And he makes things happen. Mm. So he reminds me of the lads at Quinns, like Liner, Murley. They just go out, fight, find work to do, make things happen. he has some of that about him.
He's an unusual player. I like him. So I didn't actually see this game because I was watching my beloved Bordeaux playing. But they have got a dynamite back line. I think Furbank is playing his best rugby that he's played for a long time. Dingwall is such an important and such a solid player because he can play 12 and 13. But there's not many. I mean, he's been in the England camp because there are not many English 12s.
And the average age of that back line, like Alex Mitchell's the eldest.
Is he?
And George Furbank. Yeah, Alex, he must be, because I'm just looking at all of them. There's no one older than Alex Mitchell, and he's still quite young, isn't he?
Yeah, maybe Furbank's 25,
27.
26.
I think he might be 26 or 27, and Alex Mitchell's 26. So you've got two guys that... Oh, Furbank's 27. So you've got Furbank and Mitchell, and then, I mean, the average age would be like 23, 24
If that.
Of the whole back line, if that.
Yeah.
All English.
Yeah, so yeah. Northampton have got a real eye, I think, for spotting English talent, whether they're buying it in or they're developing it. But they've done this for a couple of generations now. So probably the best Northampton team of sort of recent times would be the the Ashton, maybe a little later than Ashton, but like the Foden, Myler.
Yeah, the one that won it.
Yes.
The Premiership in 2013, I want
Luther
to say.
Burrell.
Yeah, big Luth.
And they all came from elsewhere. They were all, and they were all bought in because of the knowledge garnered from Jim Mallander working with Steve Diamond in the England under-21s. Mm. So they managed to pilfer all sorts of players from Sale, actually, at that time, which is good because it gave them an opportunity to shine, and then eventually they won the Premiership. Mm. But, you know, as an organisation, they always target young English talent. Like, bringing Finn Smith in was a hell of a gamble, particularly when you've got Dan Bigger running the show. But so, yeah, we're going to give everything to this kid. Let's see how it goes.
And let Dan Bigger go.
Yeah. Smart. Well, I mean, I'd love to have him in the Premiership, but still.
Equally.
He'd already signed for Northampton, but his arrival was accelerated.
Yes.
Thanks to the impending doom of Worcester.
Equally, like you mentioned Tom Pearson was on the bench. Starting for them, and another young lock.
Moon?
In Lockett.
Oh, yep.
Who looks a player. And Sam Graham signed from Doncaster.
Yeah.
At number 8.
Yeah. Yeah, they've...
Angus Scott-Young.
He played very well.
He played really well. But, like, no Ludlam, no Pearson. And they've had guys like Rotuni Yarawa go in. They don't have Alex Coles. And... They've got other players, and they've always had great backs. Well, for quite a number of years now, they've had great backs. But there's just, I don't know. They've changed. They seem to me like they've changed the balance in how they play.
They
do kick a lot more, and I think they're recognizing that they have to pick their moments.
Yeah, and when it's on. So, like, yeah. If you're looking at, I mean, Furbank's a great barometer of how that team is going to go, because when he's playing well, everything seems to click. They've signed some very smart players, like Trevor Davidson coming in is quite smart to, you know, strengthen up the scrum. I still enjoy the fact that they do often get battered at scrum time, and they always interview Matt Ferguson
yeah.
who doesn't seem to have a clue what's going on or why they're getting battered. But nevertheless, it's always a fun time.
Just on that tight head prop situation for England, which is a big concern, Trevor Davidson is someone that looks okay when he plays.
Yeah, it's absolutely great. Very serviceable.
You've got Nick Shonnott for Sale is looking decent when he plays. Will Stewart look good for Bath? There's actually players knocking around that could do a job.
It's just
Aaron Painter as well.
Yeah, Aaron Painter, yeah.
It's just picking these lads out and giving them a chance, isn't it? I mean, every one of those would have played for Wales.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
So just give them a chance, see what they've got. But in England, they're kind of determined to have the finished product before he's had a single game.
And who was the guy who started? Ben Harris started for Stormers. Oh no, that's not Ben Harris.
Harris.
No, it's different. Yeah, I remember seeing B Harris and going, "Is that the guy that used to play for Wasps?"
Wasps, yeah.
But no, it's not.
No, Brock Harris used to play. Did he not play at Dragons for a little while? Anyway,
it doesn't matter.
It certainly does not matter. The other one I was going to mention as well is one of my favourites, which is Curtis Langdon, who they've signed from Montpellier via Worcester. And he is an absolute baller. I mean, he's not he's not one of those standout players that everyone talks about. But I've watched this guy for a couple of years at Sale, and I absolutely loved every time he comes on. Works hard, hits his line outs, deceptively strong, but he's just not a superstar or a big name in the same way Aka van der Merwe is, or Augustin Creevy or any of the set hookers.
Yeah, Luke Cowan-Dickie,
Tommy Taylor. I mean, you know, so you are going to struggle there, but he is a great addition to them because it's exactly what they needed.
Talking of big players delivering on big stages, like he was up against one of the most talked about players in his position on earth, and he was the boy, Henry Slade, opposite Naya Thelevu, and what a hero that man is.
Yeah.
And Rob Baxter, what a job.
That
to go away to Toulon and win in the manner that they won.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming at all.
No, definitely not.
Nobody understands rugby fully. Just nobody does, no matter how much they tell you that they know the game. But the closest you can come to understanding rugby is understanding that you don't understand it. Right? It doesn't matter. Right? But what Rob Baxter does do is he understands the most important bits intrinsically. Like, whatever lens he sees this game through is just different to everyone else. That is a win for the ages. And you could tell by the way that the players celebrated.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Well, I just hope, watching those scenes at the end when Henry Slade got messed around before that kick.
Ice cold.
Slotted it. The celebration, what I was just thinking and hoping was that isn't like the highlight of Exeter's Champions Cup season, stealing an away win and then it's all downhill from there.
I agree. Do you know what I thought you were about to say for a second? Seeing those celebrations, Henry Slade being messed about, having to move the ball, then I thought you were going, I was hoping that would be the moment the cock tap made a return.
I did think, I was looking.
That would be a good time, boys.
If ever there's a time for the cock tap to come back.
They all grouped around him.
Yeah. The Exeter situation reminds me of the NFL. Do you know, sometimes in the NFL, they've just got a group of players and they're just all too good to stay in the same place for any length of time, even though they've developed them and they've got to pick the one which they really want. And it's hard because to keep Henry Slade, you've got to get rid of everybody, it would seem.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
The Simmons brothers, yeah. Cowan-Dickie, Noel.
Jack Noel.
Ewers.
Hoggy went. Yeah.
Flaherty already went.
Yeah, Big Dave Ewers.
Ewers, Hill.
Ewers,
Simmons.
Yeah, Johnny
Armand.
Hill, God.
Johnny Hill.
Yeah.
Sam Skinner.
So many others.
It's incredible.
Harry Williams.
Is Harry Williams gone?
Yeah, Montpellier.
Bloody hell. Yeah, so they've had to rebuild that. So one guy is more important than all of those, and it seems to be Henry Slade is the boy.
Oh, Janice Kirsten went as well?
Yes, he did. Yeah, so the amount of lads that they've lost is incredible. So this is a proper rebuild.
Daffith Jenkins was heroic in the pack as well. Captain and playing like a... playing like Alan Wynne-Jones would have done when he was 20.
What point do we... Oh, and Hawkins seems to be a very good addition for them. But at what point do they say to David Jenkins, you can't play for Wales? Because they must row back on that. When he extends that contract or signs a new one, they must row back on it.
But it's the WRU. They will force him to go to Wales for a market rate offer.
And Zunder too. So I think market. I think if they hold their own and stay in Exeter... the WRU will have to relent. They just can't afford to lose a lock of that quality.
But it's the WRU though. Like if it was a logical organisation, then I agree with you.
They are fools, aren't they? Fools of the highest order.
But it will. Like Exeter, unfortunately, those two, obviously Hawkins, they've bought in, but Daffy Jenkins and Chris Tshunza are getting amazing experience in Exeter. They are learning from one of the great rugby brains in Baxter, and then the WRU are going to force them to go back to Wales.
Yeah. Well, and they're learning the right things. I mean, that's what Baxter does. He identifies the right things. When you talk to him about rugby, he obviously understands it at a deep, deep level, but it's able to make it incredibly simple.
Do you know what I loved, Mo? That my favourite bit about watching that Exeter game was Rob Baxter when they scored what turned out to be the winning try, but the conversion was actually what they needed to win the game. Mm. And Rob Baxter wrapped up his headphones, shook hands with all of his coaches, had a big smile on his face before Henry Slade had kicked. Either he's got that much confidence in Henry Slade, it was like, well, that kick's done. Or the result was immaterial to Rob Baxter and he was just like, it was actually, they gave the performance that I wanted. And so whether this kick goes over or not, I don't really mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love that about Rob Baxter.
Well, it is a classic example of control your controllables. What was he going to do? Like, miss? If Henry Slade misses and he throws Steve Diamond-esque his headset across the crowd, right? Which was a glorious distraction. Like, what is that ball going to go over?
I miss Dimes.
So do I.
I mean, he was on the telly last weekend, but I do. I do miss him just every week.
It was an absolute
doing that little tick he does with his mouth and like just
getting so angry,
getting really angry. Yeah. And he sits so near the civilians, like
dangerously near
the civilians. Like that's one really cool thing about going to Sale. If you're lucky, you'll get a seat, or unlucky, whichever way you want to look at it, you'll get a seat near Steve Diamond, and it's always more entertaining than watching the match.
It was like the Steve Diamond show. Like if you're within 10 meters of him, everyone's looking at Diamond. Like, oh, what's Diamond going to do? What's he going to say? Who's going to batter?
And there was like the anticipation I would have. Knowing I'd be interviewing Dimes after a game.
Yeah.
And like, oh, what mood's he going to be in? Oh, no, they've just lost. He's going to be fuming.
We need him desperately back running a club. Or a nation.
Or a nation, yeah.
A nation would be great. Give him a national job.
Yes, so fair play. Henry Slade. And I think we just positionally, the two best performing 13s in England at the moment are Henry Slade and Ollie Lawrence.
Ollie Lawrence is a different gravy, isn't he?
He is a 13, though,
as we
keep saying. Is he going to be another... it's not quite the same as a 10 to 12, like Farrell to 12, but is he going to be... He is still, nevertheless, at 12, a square peg in a slightly round hole.
Yep, I completely agree with that. I don't think... I mean, he works wonderfully with Redpath, because Redpath's a great player. Henry Slade looks like more of a 12 to me than a 13 for England. But he is definitely more of a 13. I mean, how has England produced so many high-quality 13s and just nobody of note at 12? Yeah.
And Northampton are now cultivating Tommy Freeman in that position as well.
Yeah, so you could have Freeman. I mean, I know March is not available. He is a class act. Absolutely class.
Marchant, Lawrence, Slade, Freeman, and the rest.
Yep. So many.
Yeah, it is funny as well, though, because it depends what you want from your 12 and 13. And they're very different. So, like, Henry Slade and, say, Sam James, they play 13, that is their position. They are wildly different to...
Don't forget Manu.
Well, I was going to say, they're wildly different to, say, Ollie Lawrence or Manu Tuilagi, who are 13s as their primary position, and they're different to Marchant, who is a 13 as his primary position. They all have slight overlaps, but if you drew the Venn diagram of Sam James and Slade... Manu and Ollie Lawrence and Marchant, it would all be slightly different.
Can you just hold that thought? I need to nip out.
Okay.
Okay, I'll put a little marker there. Someone get a red cross back for your sofa.
Are we still recording or just paused?
Oh, I've put a marker in. We can carry on. Yeah, we can carry on.
Yes, I'm sure. Ooh. Something stirring out there.
No, it's fine. So what Steve Borthwick does with his centre position at Six Nations time, I don't know, but both of those guys have to be involved.
Yeah, and he no longer has the option of Farrell getting moved out to 12.
No.
Which might be a good thing, takes that off the table.
But I think he's going to put Lawrence...
At 12. I think so.
Which, I get it, it might be a... It might, but it's a compromise again because Lawrence is playing so well. Not because he's at 13, he always plays really well at 13.
Yeah, and if we're going to list the English qualified 12s,
Dingwall,
Manu was playing 12 this week, wasn't he?
Yeah, Manu.
But I think the Manu time is over now. I think
Manu, Dingwall. Ajomo.
But Ajomo didn't play this week, did he?
No, he didn't play this week. So who played? Path.
Yeah. I'm just thinking from this week. You had Atkinson playing in the Challenge Cup.
Yes.
Seb Atkinson.
Oh, Dan Kelly, did he play?
I didn't really watch the Leicester game.
No, nor me. It was Solomon Okata.
There you go.
So Dan Kelly was on the bench.
And Dan Kelly, from what I've seen of him this year... I don't think he's stepped up in the way that I'd want him to.
No.
I'm not saying he won't, and he's clearly a talented lad, but he wouldn't be the front runner.
That's all right.
He's nip out again in 15 minutes.
Is this your apple treat?
Yeah, I've made like an apple-based dessert of some description, and I can't really describe it, but it's very nice. So I just need... It's in the oven for...
Oh, I thought it was some, like, weird eating thing where you have to eat every 15 minutes.
No.
Is this some, like, high-calorie burn technique or something?
Sadly not. I wish it was, because I do need to burn some calories bloody quickly.
quickly.
Well, friend of the pod, Eddie Stevens, says the carnivore diet in chunks of time, like do a month of that and you just melt fat.
Tell you what, I would be so miserable on the carnivore diet. It sounds great.
Sounds great. Like, oh, I'll have bacon for breakfast, ooh, steak for tea.
Eggs, am I allowed eggs? Sure, I'm allowed eggs.
Carnivore eggs? Are you allowed eggs? Oh, that would be sure.
Sounds pretty carnivorous to me.
You've got to crunch through the shells.
Yeah. Like ribeye steak every night. What's there not to like? Oh, your entire life.
You can have all meats and fish, eggs, bone marrow, butter and lard.
Get some bone marrow.
As well as small amounts of hard cheese and heavy cream.
Yeah, okay. No.
But if you can have cream and eggs, that means you can knock... I mean, you can't have pasta. I was going to say you can knock up a carbonara.
No, but you can't. Apparently, it's going to be miserable.
So if England had to pick a 12 from just this game week of starting English qualified 12s, it's Dingwall...
Or Manu.
Or Manu.
Dingwall.
Or Seb Atkinson.
Seb Atkinson's a Challenge Cup.
I would have Dingwall. I like Dingwall.
Just get an expert in there. Like he's playing there week in, week out. They play nice rugby. He's a good operator. Just needs an opportunity. Give it to him.
Give it Dingwall to the end of the season.
I'm actually with you there. It needs to be a specialist. And I think I kind of agree with Dingwall because Manu is very effective at what he does. But again, he's best when he's at 13. He spent his whole career at 13 until he went to Sale. Yeah. Fair enough, he's been there for a couple of years, but...
And is Manu making the next World Cup?
No.
Nope.
So, yeah. It is finally time to wean off.
Although I am going to just say, I don't... Who's going to make the next World Cup is not what is in my mind. I want to win the Six Nations.
Mm. Which is a good point.
TV's best pundit, easily best pundit...
Austin Healey. Yeah.
Was raving about Freeman. Absolutely raving about him. Where does he rank in your 13 ratings?
I would just like to say this is something I've been saying should happen for quite a long time on the podcast.
And, what's that?
And on YouTube videos. Please, Tommy Freeman, move to centres. I did say he should be England's answer to 12.
I don't know about 12, though. It feels like a waste.
He's a big lad.
He is huge. But he's so explosive. And his running ability... I can't really see it being of much use at 12. Why would you want him at 12? Because of his size.
Because of his size and skill set.
I mean, Jamie Roberts started on the wing.
Yeah. Mm. And you look at the great centres around world rugby, and this is the one thing I'd say against Dingwall at international level, Dielende and Esterhazy for South Africa, Jordy Barrett for New Zealand, Donty for France. These are Aki for Ireland.
Yeah.
The top five teams have all got big men.
Yeah, the problem is with that is just because you're a big man doesn't necessarily mean you play like one.
No, but exactly. But Tommy Freeman is a big man with skills. That's why.
I would love to see it.
I'd love to go back in time and have Ben Earl continue at centre where he started.
I think he'd probably move there right now and be all right. You do run the risk, as many players have had happen to them in the past, when you're super talented. They move you around far too much. Actually happened to Austin Healey. Henry Slade. Yeah. Henry Slade's only really just recovering now. He should have been a 10, should have been a fullback, should have been a 12, now finally is a 13. But they pick a position for Freeman, stick him there for the long term. If that's 13, fine, but it has to happen.
Well, I was actually going to compare him to another English player, English and British and Irish Lion, who has been moved around the positions, he was better for it, Elliot Daly.
You weren't going to say Rob Dupree?
Is he English qualified?
He probably is now.
Qualified. He could do an Elliot Daly style role.
That'd be nice. You can never have too many Elliot Dalys, that's for sure.
So I think that's where Tommy Freeman, he could play a bit of 13, but could also do a job at 15 and on the wing. And he's got a lot of similarities with Daly. Shout.
But in terms of the ranking, 13s, is that what you asked?
Yes.
Ollie Lawrence is number one at the moment. Ollie Lawrence or Henry Slade, number one.
Agreed.
1A, 1B. They're different types.
I think they're probably going to play 12 and 13, but who wears what position? And you might find that Lawrence defends inside but attacks outside. Or
yes.
You can make those two work. Definitely make those two work. But yeah, I think I'd love to see Freeman in the squad. I'd probably, he wouldn't be far off starting one of the wing berths for me.
Yeah, get your best players on the field. And he is definitely one of the best English backs at the moment.
Yes, because the starters in the World Cup were Johnny May and Elliot Daly.
Yep.
In the wing roles. Certainly Johnny May won't be playing for England again, I don't think.
Nope.
Elliot Daly probably still can, but he'll be 35 at the next World Cup. So I do agree with your point, Tim. Elliot Daly is one of the best two wingers for England right now, and therefore he should be playing, but you need to think ahead as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Next game? Do you want to talk about Sale? Sorry, I watched that.
You talk about it, because I saw Manu's hit, because it was kind of on in the background, but I wasn't really paying much attention.
It wasn't really even the best hit of the day.
Was it not?
No.
Ethan Roots on putting an absolutely... Oh, no, not Ethan Roots. Yeah, that's the guy at Sale. Blindside.
No, that's...
Ethan Roots is Exeter.
No, who's the six?
Rune van Rijnd or what?
The shot that he put in.
Well,
It was Dugdale and Curry and Dupree in the back row, wasn't it?
Start with, yeah. And then Dupree came off early with an injury. Beaumont comes on.
Which one was it? It was...
Well, I don't know, but the one I want to talk about is the Ward hit. He read...
I think it might have been Dugdale. Has he changed his haircut?
Quite possible.
I think it might have been Dugdale I saw.
Dugdale's a hard boy.
Someone smashed someone. Yeah, I remember that.
So
facts. Someone absolutely marmalised someone else.
So the smashing that I saw was Jeremy Ward smashing George Ford. Absolutely levelled him I don't know how people have not done this to Johnny Sexton his whole career, but they tried to do a little wraparound. Sales... Sales attack bad? I'm going to say it was bad. Like, they had no real cutting edge.
28 points?
In the first half.
Okay.
So the first half was, I think, 9-5 or something? I can't remember.
Yeah, 6-5.
Yeah, something like that. And Sale had the majority of the possession. Like, they should really be putting 3 or 4 tries on Stade Francais, looking at how they went. I don't know what sort of team Stade Francais put out, so I looked up every single player that they had. I literally do not know a single one of these players.
I think there was only one, maybe two players that started last weekend's win against Toulouse.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And then another problem...
It was a second string Stade Francais team.
Yeah, but there's a much bigger problem with Stade Francais and me picking a team at the moment. Do you know what that bigger problem is?
You just love Sale too much.
No, it flashed to the crowd. Guess who was coaching?
Stade Francais. I do know this.
Stade Francais, is Paul Gustard involved?
It is Paul Gustard. I can't support them. I honestly have not a low opinion. Yeah, mate, I would say a low opinion. I just don't think he's the coach for me. Like, a team's got to have an identity. When you're busy trying to carve bears in the Harlequins training ground and land attack helicopters when you're getting roundly beat most weekends.
You would love an attack helicopter.
I mean, I would. Yeah. I mean, providing my lineouts were on point. Yeah, get me an attack helicopter.
So which French team are you hedging towards now?
I don't know. I was very close to saying, yeah, Stade Francais, but as soon as I saw Guzzi in his pink hat, I thought, no.
They are, that was a second string team. They are currently top of the top 14.
Interesting. Okay, so just a few more things on Paul Gustard before we go. I've seen Paul Gustard in action. So I used to...
Sorry, they're fourth in the top 14, 1 point behind Racing.
Thank you.
Anyway.
So I was sat in the gantry, and you basically it's you and the opposition coaches at Sale, right at the top. And the way he talks to the press and the way he behaves when watching his team is completely different. And it's not like a personal criticism, but it is completely different. So do you know they say, oh, it's about empowering players. Oh, we don't talk about what they do on the pitch. It's their decision. But when you watch him in person, watching the game, it's like, why did he do that? He knows not to do that. It's a completely different guy. And then his press conferences were weird because he never sat down. Did you see that, Tim?
No.
So Gustard, after every press conference, doesn't sit down. So most coaches sit down and they ask the questions. Gustard would come in and he'd stand up and gets everyone to gather around him so no one's too comfortable and then leaves again. And then again.
So they've all got to hold mics in his face.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Well, you have to hold mics in their face anyway, really.
Well, no, because you just put them on the desk.
Oh, yeah, put them on the desk. Yeah, fair. So you've got to hold these mics.
Power move. I thought that would be something you quite like about him. That'd make you endear him to you.
It's not that I don't like it, it's just an interesting fact. I'm not over keen about all the flowery language and attack helicopters. But just tell us what you think, Paul. Like, and, if you want them to do certain things, just say that.
And I'm never going to criticise a coach for being different up in the gantry to in front of the cameras.
I don't know about that, because when you're talking about William, it's not... I understand that if you don't say a word, like say you're Steve Borthwick, you obviously know there's a different layer behind that guy, right? You just know that. But when you present this other layer of... Yeah, it's about player empowerment and, you know, we make them do the decisions. It's all about them taking ownership. And then actually you can hear him shouting like, why are they not doing the things which I told them to do 5 minutes ago? Like, it's a completely, it's like a juxtaposition. It's different.
Rob Baxter is total open book.
Yeah.
Complete the same. Pat Lam is as well. In my experience, he is.
Yeah, there was the incident at Leicester. I mean,
yes.
Yeah,
he is openly.
Everyone has moments, don't
he? He is openly insincere. He is, definitely. Brothers and all the rest of it. Grow up.
Love, brother. No, I think.
Grow up.
I think
love.
I think that's sincere.
I wonder what his players are saying.
I think that is sincere.
If it wasn't.
Yeah, actually, from what I've heard, it is quite sincere.
I don't know what you mean there. Mark McCall's very measured. And he's still very quiet and calm and collected, but I imagine his players see a very different side to him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And again, that's just the media face, and that's absolutely fine. If you don't want to play your cards, I mean, it is fine. It's got pros and cons. Maybe they think they're best to be guarded. I think you're best to be more open. Steve Diamond is literally Steve Diamond all of the time, times 100. Same for Sanderson, to be fair.
Yeah.
I mean, Sanderson does come out with all those sort of TED talky type things constantly, no matter where he is.
Shall we talk about another English team?
Go on.
And one that I watched intently and was devastated with the last, say, 10, 15 minutes.
Oh, you're proud Ulsterman.
Oh, it was a good game, this. All of the games this weekend were in tricky conditions. This was in tricky conditions. Ulster. So Bath, bit of an arm wrestle. Bath scored after 20 or so, 25 minutes, with a great pass from Spencer off the back of a ruck for Thoknesinger to dot down. And then Ulster came back into it, scored two tries before half-time, go in at the break, 14-8, and were kind of very much in the game, starting to get pressure build up on them from the line-out, from the scrums, towards the last 20 minutes, and then the floodgates just opened, and it was three or four tries in the last 10 minutes, not helped by the, I think it was a Timoney, or was it one of the subs, yellow card, Matty Ray, yellow card with 15 minutes to go, and it looks like an absolute hiding on the scoreline, but it was, Ulster should have got something out, be it, they really should have got a losing bonus point out of that game. So disappointing. But the flip side of that is when Bath do get some opportunity, when they do manage to cut loose, either through that Spencer pass to Thoknesinger or the other Thoknesinger try or the Matt Gallagher try at the end, they look dynamite. Mm-hmm. That back line is so good.
Yeah, what the pass over the top by Finn Russell, just some mega pass. I think maybe the first try? Can't remember.
The first try was a Spencer. It was like a missed three.
Yeah, was it Spencer?
It was Spencer. It was Barbary picked up off the back of ruck, but just took like one step and pops it to Spencer. Yeah. That was an amazing pass.
So, I mean, what it is to be a Bath fan at the moment, I do not know. Years of misery followed by this. I wonder if the Bath players are looking at each other now saying, we are good players, aren't we? Like, this is what we're meant to be doing. Because they are good players and they've played awfully for 2 years now, maybe three. I think they're building some real momentum.
The good thing about Bath as well, which is not necessarily something you can say about Northampton, who are another side who are going well and had success this week and have got good young talent, Bath have actually got a really solid tight five as well.
Yes, they have.
And it was their scrum and line-outs that ultimately created the room and created the pressure for them to run in the last three or four tries. And so one stat that Nick Mullins gave during this game was when Tom Dunn scored off the back of a rolling maul, which is very Bath, very predictable, So they've scored 50% of their tries in the Premiership from lineouts from rolling mauls.
Incredible.
So, and their scrum pressure, particularly when Thomas De Toy came on and Tian Schumann, the scrum pressure was massive.
Yeah.
And they've got legitimate depth in that front row. They've got two big units in the second row, and then they've got options in that back row.
So looking at this team, it's very English. Until, I mean, the whole pack is English.
Until you bring the bench on.
And the bench, they've got one Scot. Will Muir sounds like he should be Scottish. Three Scots and Mike Gallagher. And then the bench is just South Africa.
South Africa, yeah. Oh, bench, okay. Schrader, Schumann, De Toy, Van Veltzer, Kurt Seer.
Yeah, pretty South African.
Very, very South African.
It works, though.
It certainly does.
Works a treat.
And ask you had Marty Moore, Stephen Kitsoff, and Robbie Herring. So all international front rowers scrumming late on against, I think at that point it was Obano, Dunn, and Thomas De Toy. And the three international Irish or Ulster players were having a torrid time. And it's not like Ulster's a small pack. Like behind them, you've got Alan O'Connor, you've got Henderson, who's massive. You've got big Dave Ewers supporting, who's 130 kg.
Yeah, he's a big, big boy.
So when that Bath scrum is putting pressure on Ulster, it is a sign of strength, a real sign of strength. Mm. And they can do the wide stuff, they can do the fancy stuff, and they can do the tough stuff at the moment.
Christ. Finn Russell seems like one brilliant signing now.
So, he's just put it all into place. Finn Russell was imperfect. Finn Russell does Finn Russell things, and some of his kicks were shaky and some of his offloads were at the wrong time. But he's given, it does feel like he's given them the confidence to say, no, we are actually a good player. Like, yeah. We can do this.
Finn says we're good.
Yeah.
What was scribbled in Steve Borthwick's notebook? Well, which names were in his notebook? He was there at that game watching. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've talked about Ollie Lawrence already and he was impressive again.
Yeah.
But surely he was looking at Ben Spencer?
Possibly.
Well, it depends. Farrell's
not there.
Alfie Barbary.
Barbary's an interesting one. Well, there was a good piece.
Obano?
Yes.
Obano could be a good shout. Yeah, yeah.
100% Obano, I think.
Obano is he's very low centre of gravity, but enormous mass and good scrummager.
The boring answer, unfortunately, is going to be Will Stewart. That's going to be the most important piece of that jigsaw on the field.
Probably Barbary could be. Well, we know Ben Earl.
We've got England's starting back row at the World Cup in the World Cup semi final is
gone.
Unavailable. Yeah,
yeah,
unfortunately,
Moore's gone. Barbary. So there was an Alex Lowe piece. I think it was Alex Lowe this week comparing Barbary's stats to other Premiership back rowers since Barbary made his debut 3-4 years ago, and he compares very favourably across a whole spectrum. So meters made with ball in hand, tries, try assists, yards after contact. He's in the top one or two against all of the comparable players, including Don Brandt, including Ben Earl, including Ludlam, including a brace of Curries.
Yeah. It's a slightly different player, but actually, in terms of significant impacts, not quite as explosive as Ben Earl, but fairly similar in terms of the way he's involved in games.
He is big. He's at least 10 kg bigger than Ben Earl.
I mean, I had some
at least
queries about his conditioning when he came back. Seems to find himself out. He has remained consistent. I would love to see him in against a team which would give him no space, because he just isn't very big. I mean, he's big-ish. He's big for a scaffolder.
Well, no, he is big.
What is he, 110?
I think he's listed at 116 kilos.
He is big. He's not tall.
He's not tall.
No, he's not tall.
6'1", maybe.
So I think England's back row for the Six Nations is going to be Underhill 7,
yep.
Barbary 8. I don't know who else it could be at 8.
Do you know, the player that I would have in England's back row, who's not playing at the moment, but I think is an absolute quality act, is another Bath man, Ted Hill.
I was going to say...
He's injured, though, isn't
he? He's injured, but I was going to say, it could be, at one point in the future, an all-Bath back row, but the six is going to need to be a line-out option, and so I think it'll probably end up being Martin or Chesham.
George Martin's a cracking shout.
Martin's injured at the moment as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
Not mention Tom Pearson. who,
yeah,
I mean, he's a bigger lad. Maybe not really the lineup option, but someone that I'd consider.
In the squad, consider. But I think it's going to be Underhill Barbary plus a lock playing on the flank.
Or Ben Curry.
Could be.
Ben Curry's a decent shout.
Then you don't have a line-out option if you have those three.
Well, Tom Curry is actually the line-out option for England. Mm. But so is Courtney Laws.
Yeah, that is because you've got Courtney Laws plus two second rows plus Morrow plus Chesham.
Or Morrow. Shift.
You could put Morrow out there.
He wants six.
That's not a bad option,
it's
you know.
It's not a bad shout.
And you've got... just find another monstrous second row then. But you can never have enough big men on a rugby field. I mean, if South Africa taught us one thing... If it's not going to be big, it needs to be violent. So you need one of those. If you can get both, it's ideal. But one of the two. So are they big or are they violent? Barbary's pretty violent. He is violent, yeah. I'll give him that. Ludlam's nice and violent.
He's violent enough that he inflicts many injuries upon himself just the way that he plays.
Do you know who's not
a bit
violent?
Like Sam Underhill,
but
like that.
But probably England's best player is actually Ben Earl. He doesn't strike me as a particularly violent guy.
Oh,
powerful,
yeah.
Explosive, but it's
just
not
so
like,
explosive.
You wouldn't want to like a front on tackle against Ben Earl.
I wouldn't want to tackle any of these boys.
No, you don't want to tackle any of them. But Ben Earl particularly, the way that he runs, he's all knees and elbows. I wouldn't want to tackle him.
Quagga Smith is the benchmark for violence on a field. So you've got to think like Underhill. Underhill's violent.
I'll tell you three players that we've not mentioned, or at least two players that we've not mentioned who might be in for a shout for England. Who were playing in possibly the best game of the weekend.
Oh, that's Will Evans.
Yeah, so Harlequins, the back row for Harlequins was Dom Brandt, number 8, we not mentioned. Will Evans at number 7, we not mentioned. And Chandler Cunningham South.
Yes, he is a baller.
He's only 20, but he's a big, strong boy. Mm-hmm. And he can play as well.
Yeah, he can. I really like... Kenningham, who they've got there too.
Yeah, who's been injured for a little while.
He is big and he is a lineout.
He is a lineout option. Yeah, yeah.
Chandler Cunningham South. Right, I need to get this right.
Give him time.
Yeah,
throw him
in.
I'm thinking of his age.
Kids in, Tim, you always say.
Chandler Cunningham South is 20. Yep. Means he was born in.
He's 1993. No, sorry, 93. 2003.
Which means that Friends had been around for 9 years by then, so he was blatantly named after Chandler from Friends.
Yeah, 100%. Without a shadow of a doubt.
I had a situation where I did look at and go, oh, police look younger these days. When I was, oh my God, police officers look so young.
Hey, did I tell you there's a criminal running through my back garden?
Yeah, you did. You mentioned it on last week's pod, yeah.
Gave chase. Good chase. No.
Yeah. It's your dream,
stood at the
it?
Back door and shook your fist.
Well, the door's locked. I couldn't find the keys in time. I'd be straight out there.
Like Batman.
Yeah,
vigilante exactly. Justice.
What a win that was in the Thunderdome by Quins, by the way. Oh, yeah. Are you going to come to the Thunderdome?
Oh, stop.
Yes.
Stop. I'm going to check my...
Oh, yeah, check your apple dessert. Well, I'll ask Phil. Are we doing the Thunderdome?
Definitely.
Awesome.
Definitely. So is that about the 25th of...
It's the 25th of... I'll have a look. It's the... we're going to be having a little bit of an Egg Chasers away day... helped by friend of the pod Lewis, who's an all-round legend, and it's Racing versus Toulouse, Saturday the 27th of January.
Very excited.
And I don't know, has Lewis been in touch?
I think he mentioned it a little while ago, not since then. But yes, he definitely keen.
All you need to do is get yourself to Paris. That's all you need to do.
Perfect.
Which is amazing. So we'll
get to Paris.
Yeah. So we'll have to do the pod. We'll do it.
We'll manage it.
We'll manage it. But yeah, what a win for Quins.
It was a hell of a game. The game was dynamic. Because you sometimes say, like, some of these games where it is the real arm wrestling, there's all this pressure, like the Leinster win in La Rochelle in horrible conditions.
Filthy.
Some of them, the pressure of the situation means that both teams are too afraid to make any mistakes. Therefore, it ends up being quite a low-scoring game. This was just the complete opposite.
Yeah.
Both teams were putting in incredibly physical hits, but both teams just want to play from anywhere. It was so exciting.
Yeah, 17-14 at half-time with two converted tries each, just one penalty being the only difference between the sides. A drop goal. Not a penalty, a drop goal.
From nearly 50 metres as
yes,
well.
Yes, I know.
Smith hanging out with Ford and Farrell too much.
Yeah. It's rubbing off, isn't it? So that, that drop goal was the...
was the difference.
It was the difference because it was
four converted tries each.
By the way, with in the Toulon game, Baptiste Serrant went off with a really nasty-looking shoulder injury. I think his shoulder popped out completely, so and he was looking very fragile. So without Dupont, I was thinking Serrant might be the boy.
But it'll be my boy, Luku.
It could be Luku or Le Garrick. Was pretty handy for Racing. He's a young guy coming through.
Scoring a hat-trick.
A hat-trick, yeah.
Does always help.
But he's been good for a while now, and he seems to have kind of taken the reins at Racing.
Mm.
And they're top of the top 14, so yeah. How do they make so many good players in that position, especially in France?
I know. We're bemoaning the fact that England can't make a single or hardly make a single 12, and France have just got number nines. Wildly different.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Different position, but they just create them, come from all over the place.
In my beloved Bayonne, they had Maxime Machinot still knocking around.
Knocking around, he must be 35 or something. Yeah. Is it...
And Aprazid, he's not French, but Aprazid was on the bench, scrum off. Yeah, sorry.
Is it Camille Lopez at Bayonne as well? Is he...
Yes.
He's there.
Yeah, he's
there. That is an old... Yeah. That is an ancient 9-10. Yeah. Oh, experienced 9-10.
Experienced, quite right. Quite right. Oh, that's... Is he tending to his apple? Is that Jay just out there?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Someone.
I thought this was an awesome game. And to win it in the way they did, camped on their own line, down to 14 men.
Down to 14 men, but then forced the knock-on, wasn't it, right at the end?
Yeah.
I thought they defended brilliantly. Obviously, the tries kind of got them, and Harlequins took their opportunity so, so well. It was such an exciting game. And Marcus Smith did look phenomenal in that game.
He really did.
From his drop goal, from how he controlled territory and built pressure onto Racing 92, to some of his line breaks. For his try, the step back inside where Khaleesi overchased Khaleesi, Saïli, and I think it was Le Garrick.
I've heard Khaleesi's quite good at rugby. So, yeah.
Not bad. Not bad at rugby. I mean, he had a few nice...
Total disaster.
Ruined it?
Absolute disaster.
What happened?
Can you bring some
is
down to me
burnt?
Tim can try.
No, it's not burnt. It's too sweet.
Too sweet. And I'll be the judge of that.
That's an oxymoron.
It's fallen to pieces.
Oh.
As I when I tip out, it's going to be the perfect shape of the mould. I've used too much caramel.
Too much caramel. Story of my life.
So, are you throwing it in the bin or are you going to give me and Phil a little slice before we go?
Well, I'm waiting for it to cool down. So it just, when I tipped it over, it just all spread out. You know, like...
Blancmange.
Yeah. So I put it back in its mould, waiting for it to cool down. Hopefully, as it cools, it might stick.
Solidifies.
But it's a desire. I'll be making a new one tomorrow.
So we can have this one.
Is this a cheat day food? Or is
I saw it on... Do you know when you're looking at Instagram?
I don't do Instagram.
The thing I love about Instagram is two things.
Lifting.
CrossFit.
Lifting. Watch it all day long, right? even though I'm watching the same weights, the same people over and over again. Who knows? Also the recipes. If I see a recipe that I like... I'll just make it and feed it to other people. So, yeah, I've tried to make this apple dessert. Disaster. Absolute disaster.
Speaking of Olympic lifting, we were out, JB and I were out last night. There was a girl in the bar that you joined us in, Society, who was wearing an Illico.
Oh, she?
Yeah, yeah. Illico, the very nice weightlifting.
There's a listener who works for Illico.
Yes, there is, isn't there?
He's done what he can, but he's only able to...
They're so expensive.
They're so expensive. Even his, there's this little discount. No, Yeah. Thank you, but yeah, no.
20% off £1 million is still too much money.
If I had all the money in the world, I would kit my gym out with only Alico stuff. It is so cool. I love the fact they only do three colours.
It's awesome.
You've got pine, you've got blue, you've got white, and then orange. Four colours. What do you want? That's it. That's it. It's the coolest kit.
What's this? Oh, right, as in the kit. I thought you meant the plates. I was going to say plates are standard colour.
Oh, no. So, the kit is like pine, white, the Alico blue, and an orange. And that's it. Don't get any, like, no novelty here. Lift some weights.
Well, it's kind of like the wealthiest, richest people have very limited wardrobe because it's one less decision they have to make in a day.
I've heard this.
Just streamline all the things that you might have to make a decision about to make them easy.
Oh, my word. You need to see this video. You need to see it. It is from Grift Nation, and it is there. It's the head of Grift Nation. Every single morning wakes up and says he trains like an athlete because I need to work with athletes every day. It's a 50-year-old man. He's got a lovely home gym, but with the best one in the world. Not a professional athlete.
If he said, I need to train like an athlete so I combat the decline of the aging process and look really good still when I'm on a beach.
He does look good, but it's just so naff. Everything about him is so... I can't believe that these players are signing up with this guy, because you watch it and you go, this is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Like,
they must be making bank from it, though.
Well, you don't make that much money from rugby players. That's the truth of the matter.
No, you do if you're...
They're just not very profitable.
You do if that rugby player is Sia Khaleesi.
Well, I mean, I don't want to tell the same story again, but to think that he watched a rugby match with Sia Khaleesi in it, surrounded by all the superstars, and Sia Khaleesi was the one that stood out to him. Having never watched rugby before, the guy must be a breakdown expert. He just must have a real eye for breakdown talent. Because you never watch a game, do you? Sia Khaleesi, that is the boy. He has inspired me today. If you know your stuff, you go, oh, that's a nice little thing he did here and there. But he's on the same field as Peter Steph de Toy. Like, why do you not say him Peter Steph? Peter Steph? Anyway.
Or Chesson Colby.
Oh, he has signed Chesson Colby.
Has he?
Yeah. So it's Chesson Colby, it's Peter... no, it's not. Chesson Colby.
Beast.
Just think of every prominent black player.
Maro.
Sia. There's a few others too.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're targeting prominent black players. Mm-hmm. And like the thing is, I wonder as well, when they interview these guys, so they had the URC head, Martin Anu, is that how you say his name?
Yeah,
I've seen it written, but I've not seen it said.
I know who you mean.
Him, the guy from Grift Nation, and they've said, oh, and then all of a sudden, Jay-Z's into rugby. And I do wonder, how much does Jay-Z actually know about what's going on?
Well, beware as well, because do you remember when... Who was the guy that used to be the linebacker for Baltimore Ravens?
Ray Lewis.
Do you remember when Ray Lewis was interested in rugby and looking at London Irish?
Yeah, apparently.
It turns out what they actually wanted, if it was going to happen, was to buy Hazelwood off London Irish so they could use it as a base for the Jacksonville Jaguars as a London franchise. Yeah. And actually, London Irish, you can bugger off.
Off you go, mate. Mm. So, what is a gold ring principle? Do you remember it?
The gold ring
principle is that if you need the other assets in order to keep a rugby team afloat, then eventually someone's going to say we don't want the rugby part of the business.
Yes, exactly. So I've come up with the gold ring principle, right? But there's also an actual gold ring principle, which is like a halo effect of something.
Oh, really?
That's why I asked. Like, does anyone know what it is?
Let's have a look.
So I've the gold ring principle to me is purely. Business owners are attracted to rugby clubs for their non-rugby assets,
yes.
Effectively.
Yeah, yeah. I've just typed in gold ring principle and it doesn't come up with anything. Isolation of chicken immunoglobulins from egg yolk, 2003.
That'll do. Well, there you are. The
gold ring principle. Perfect.
Yeah. Yes. Shall we move on?
Lavishing praise on Marcus Smith.
Marcus Smith. So Marcus Smith does this thing when he accelerates. He's like a cartoon because he accelerates and he throws his head back and arches his back.
Yes, he does.
Very Fijian, that.
It's very, yeah, it is quite Fijian, actually. Who was the old
Serevi?
Serevi, the sevens
player.
He used
to do that a lot.
Yeah. Like goose step and yeah. then throw his head back. It reminds me, so I went to watch the Super Mario Brothers movie with my four-year-old earlier this year. And Mario in that film runs with his arms behind his back. So he runs like to make him it look like he's going really fast. And my four-year-old started running with his arms behind his back to make him look like he was going really fast.
And does it work?
Not really. He's incredibly slow.
Bad for catching a ball.
That's only like the... I remember when I was a kid, you used to put your coat with a hood. You used to put just the hood on your
just
head.
Just your hood.
So yes. It's like a cape behind
exactly.
you.
Exactly. But yeah, Marcus Smith is like a cartoon character yeah. when he does that goose step and acceleration with his head back. But it works. He looked fantastic in this
game. He might give himself some subconcussive whiplash from that movie.
Ban it.
TBIs.
Oh, the tackling ban is coming in rugby league in England. So yeah. we have a load of... we have a bunch of rugby league players who play in the Broughton Park under-16s rugby team. And the dads of the rugby league players have kind of been sort of going, oh, what's going on with the union? What's going on? This isn't right. And now it's coming to league. Only even more so. They've actually gone further in league than they went
with
union.
They've gone, I was talking to someone about this last night, actually. Who was I talking to? Oh, no, I was talking to someone CrossFit that used to actually work for Super League, my friend Mark. And he was saying that it's not gone as low as rugby union in the community game. But actually, this leads us on nicely to the concussion lawsuit.
No, they're banning everything above the base. Any contact above the base of the sternum.
Stupid.
Is going to be outlawed. Whereas in rugby union, my experience this season is, and maybe this will be the same in league next year, that you sometimes get real picky refs.
Yeah.
Who, letter of the law, and that was sternum. And if it's like borderline, they penalise it.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of referees, if it's borderline... i.e. as long as there's not actual contact, shoulder height or above, they just go,
play on.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, that's how the game was last year.
So, we'll go back to the Champions Cup, but just as this is interesting, do you want me to tell you what I found out about this concussion lawsuit?
Yes, I think so. I am interested in this.
Okay, so nothing groundbreaking, but it's good to know. It's good to have a different angle on it, because I don't think anyone knows the angles that... I mean, when it's written about in the press, and this isn't a criticism necessarily of the press, but particularly the rugby press in the UK, they're very comfortable about talking about the rugby, but they're not so comfortable about talking about things like CVC, for instance, because it is complex and it's a different job. It's a different job. And rugby's not big enough to attract actual legal journalists to it. There just wouldn't be enough time. So I think we haven't heard enough about what this concussion case is, how it's working, and... these are my views then layered on top of it. So it's either no win, no fee, or it's a half win, half fee. And what's really interesting about this and what no one's spoken about...
Do you mean no win, half fee?
No win, half fee, no win, no fee.
You said no win, no fee, or half win, half fee.
Sorry, no win, half fee. You're absolutely right, Tim. You're absolutely right. So it depends who you listen to. On the website for Rylands, who are the law firm doing it, they seem to say... no win, no fee. But I've heard from several players now, it's no win, half fee. And that's a real big difference, as we'll discuss in a second. Now, if it says no win, no fee on the website, I'm going to assume it is no win, no fee, and that some people may be mistaken. So the process is this. You go on the website, you sign up, and then you get an assessment. Now, this assessment is done by a doctor who is also responsible for the majority of the early onset dementia cases, which is nothing wrong with it. He might just be the only doctor assessing early onset dementia, but he's certainly one of the most prominent people doing it. And that sometimes can raise concerns if all the diagnoses are coming from one source.
And this, what is this assessment that he's doing? Or is it a series of assessments?
Yeah, so it's a battery of tests, and the tests can be all sorts of things, but sometimes they're just as easy as done on like online. Now, this is really important, though, because what people don't talk about with no win, no fee is there actually is a fee. And the fee will occur if you decide not to prosecute. Or not prosecute, you don't bring your case, you don't let the case come to fruition. Okay, so Tim's a lawyer. I've signed up on no win, no fee basis, and then I decide, right, I'm pulling out. Well, Tim's already done the work, so it's absolutely within Tim's right to then levy a fee on me for work already done. Does that make sense?
Which would make sense, yeah, because Tim's banking that he can make his money by successfully arguing your case. Yeah. You prevent him from doing that, but he's done all the work.
Sounds reasonable.
So, yeah, is that is a sensible position.
It's absolutely reasonable. But the net result of this is that we have players who are coming into the gate, who are coming to this concussion suit, and they're finding it very difficult to leave. Because what will happen is you have your battery of tests up front, and the battery of tests could cost anything up to $8,000. Right, depending on how they value it. So they would have to do the valuation for you because it's like...
I'm kind of struggling to see what's an issue.
So far, nothing. Okay. Right? But you need to...
I would say you should flip it round and headline what the point is and then fill the detail in below.
No.
It makes it really hard to...
Just let me...
Yeah.
Carry on. So they have the battery of tests first, and then... They've got a bunch of costs against their name, and then they go forward with the lawsuit, and they have to bring it to fruition. Mm-hmm. Now, this is where I start to get concerned. I get concerned on two counts. First count being, what and how rigorous are these tests? Because I've come across two players now, not one, two players that have wanted to leave, but they can't leave because the fees are so high. Mm-hmm. And in addition,
why did they want to leave?
Well,
and why did they sign up and sign the contracts?
Well, unbelievably, Tim, one of these players wanted to leave the suit and did leave the suit because he wanted to play rugby again. Think about that.
Mm.
Think about that. Okay, so there's one player there. There's two more players that wanted to leave. After the assessment, they don't have anything particularly wrong with them. They've acknowledged that, but they're still in the concussion lawsuit. And here's the question that I'd be asking, right? Yeah. How many of these players have been turned away? Like, how many lads have gone onto our website, filled in the details, and said, and the experts said to them, oh no, you don't have concussion, you can't join. My suspicion is there's going to be zero.
Well, I mean, the I said on, was it last week or whenever, that the phrase ambulance chasing has been used to describe the lawyers. But I'm still struggling to see an issue because any player that wants to leave the lawsuit must they're not by having the at some point they must have had to have signed a bit of paper and that's on them.
Well, okay, what do these players have in common more than anything else? And it isn't concussion and it isn't early onset dementia. If you look at the list of names that are signing up, these are lads, and you asked a great question, why are they signing up? Well, there's two lads that I've come across, a separate two lads. One of them joined. And he joined because his mate said, look, if you do this, you could be entitled to up to £750,000. All right, so there's some ridiculous numbers been banded around really without any kind of evidence to, you know, where these numbers have come from, how have they been generated, how will damages be paid, what will they be worth?
Yeah, it sounds like ambulance chasing, doesn't it?
Absolutely right. Now, what they've got here is a bunch of players, in my mind, the most frequent problem with them is they've had issues in the past, whether it be issues with alcohol, issues with injury, transitioning out of the game. A lot of these guys, you're looking at some of the most vulnerable guys to come out of this game in the last 20 years. So you've got a load of vulnerable players. Some do have concussion issues. Some explicitly do not, right? Or don't, certainly in the way that we're told in the press. They enter this lawsuit. They get front-loaded with a load of charges, which they can't afford to pay back anyway because they're there for the money. And if it's no win, no fee, that's one thing. You just sort of stay and wait. If it's no win, half fee, I mean, if you're struggling for cash, you just can't find, you know, well, we're 2 years in, it would cost one of them $20,000 to leave. $20,000. So you can't just find $10,000 from somewhere. That's not easy money. So I would love to know how many guys that they've turned away.
I think that's the real key question.
Isn't it?
Because if they've tested, because they've got, I think it's now 290-something players on the list for this. But how many have they screened and said, oh, well, there's zero issues from your side, therefore you're not eligible? And if that is the case, does that player get the $8,000 assessment for free? Or Do they have to pay
there's a few things I want to clarify, okay? So I do not know the cost of the assessment.
Yeah, right, okay.
I've heard the thousands of pounds worth of the assessment. Yeah, I've heard that quote for one player who does not have early onset dementia, who does not have it. So I would guess it if like you do have early onset dementia and you have to have a further battery of tests after the initial. But the fact that this guy didn't makes you think maybe they're going to be quite expensive and they're valuing it as they want. So because...
On the tests as well, I've heard... Like the test for CTE certainly is there's kind of no point in doing it while you're still alive because it doesn't tell you anything. Yeah.
So there's lots of tests going on. There's the RPA test, which is kind of done in conjunction with RFU, and that seems like some serious science going on there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, everyone basically agrees that you can't find out about concussion.
But there's also correlation and causation, and I know it's different, but I love this. Matthew Walker, this sleep expert, that there has been in recent years an explosion of young males being medicated for ADHD, that kind of thing. And he's pointed out, he said, yes, these lads probably do have symptoms of this. However, sleep. I'm not trying to make some controversial case like that doesn't exist, it's not real, but how much of that issue is just being medicated because the tick 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 that matches, and how much is just they're on their computer all night and they're staring at a screen and
they're not doing enough exercise,
they're not doing and enough, they're not eating exercise, right, they're eating crap food.
You train properly and get some good exercise, you sleep properly and you eat well, not 95% of people's ailments are going to disappear.
Yeah. Yes. So with this, and the dovetail with that is, as we said, I think the bar is going to have to be incredibly high on this lawsuit to demonstrate that there is an absolute direct causal link and there are no other factors. Alcohol. I don't know, genetics. Who knows? Any number of factors.
These other things that these rugby players will have in common, like they will have higher testosterone than the average man because they are bigger, stronger in a stronger environment. They might go out drinking more than others and certainly drinking to excess, binge drinking.
Painkillers,
yeah.
There are all sorts of like...
Michael Lippmann's on the lawsuit. Well, let's leave that there.
Yeah, so a lot of these lads have made very bad life decisions.
As everyone has.
But like we all, and it is important, you know. So in financial services, we have vulnerable client protocols. So if a client is vulnerable in a certain way, you've got to be very careful with how you deal with them. And I'm not for one second suggesting that this law firm is dealing with them in an unethical way at all. But you do have a bunch of vulnerable people who have been, who are looking at the pound signs in most cases, signing up explicitly in some cases for that reason. And then realising if they want to get out of this because they don't want their name linked to it, that it's going to cost them £20,000. Mm-hmm. And now the headline figure that you'll hear in the press is, 260 people have signed up. But then we don't know to what degree they've signed up. You know, have they signed up because these people are just accepting anyone? Could I sign up? Could we send someone to them with a script and just see if they got accepted? Like, I walk into a room sometimes and I can't find my keys.
I know an ex-pro rugby player. We should get...
I sometimes feel sad. You know, are these concussion-linked? So
I think your sadness is mostly Dubai-linked.
Yes.
And the fact that you are not still in Dubai.
Yeah. Sometimes I forget people's names. Like, you can say anything, and there's not really much you can say to disprove that it's from concussion, or it is from concussion. So that'd be the first thing. And the second thing, which I wanted to point out, is this is such a lawsuit of convenience. And I had to think about this for a little while. And then it sort of came to me that, do you know the way that the Met police don't really arrest people who have the right opinions? In fact, it's kind of...
Their policing of certain protests and others is...
So, like, you're fine to do that, but you will definitely get arrested. So the one that always stands out to me is, like, the climate change guys. I mean, the reason that they don't really arrest them is because they basically, as an organisation, agree with what they're saying, right? So they just leave them alone. And I can't help but think it's a lawsuit of convenience which the governing bodies I mean, they would say, obviously, they're going to fight it, and they are going to fight it, and they don't want to pay the money. But they are loving having this in the background, because they never talk about the details or, you know, how much it's going to actually cost them, which probably won't cost them that much, because their insurers will pick up the case, probably. This will be passed to an insurance firm. But they do use it to just get through whatever law changes that, you know, that they deem necessary. And if you've got people at the top of the game who are hell-bent on increasing participation at the cost of the game that we play, this is actually a really useful tool. I mean, I can't help but think they are, in some aspects, delighted at this, because it gives them cover for everything that they want to do. Because if you ever hear the if you ever hear people from the RFU Council talk, and you know, in some journalists too, they go, "Oh God, well, we're going to be sued out of existence." Like, well, you don't understand the first thing about it. That's, you know, you couldn't tell me how it worked, like I told you guys. You couldn't tell me the process that they went through. But they're happy to change the laws of the game based on just saying there's a lawsuit, and it's ridiculous.
We will watch that intently.
I mean, adding all that onto the fact that I think the bar's very high, and you have to prove negligence, not just that there is a relationship between playing rugby and danger. Shock horror.
Yeah.
Which is why we play it, as we've said many times. But I think because the bar's set really high, I hope that there is a robust defence of the sport.
No, because
what I suspect is that it's going to be out of court. There you go. Have some of our cash, and bankrupt the sport in the process.
Well, the insurers will pay it, is the idea.
Yeah, but that's going to cost. The cost on that of that to clubs and eventually to supporters, participants of rugby down the line, they're going to end. If an insurer takes care of it, the rugby will pay for it in one way or another down the line.
Yeah. Well, you've got to remember the other thing, right, which is that isn't the real cost to it. The real cost is the PR disaster.
Yeah.
You know, the real cost of it is when the new, there's 260 players now. There's 500 players now. There's 700 players now, without any real understanding about what these numbers mean. The real damage is that the never underestimate, in the same way that the National Trust don't like old buildings, the rugby authorities do not particularly like rugby. I mean, they'd love to change it. They like their professional game. That's where they make their money. The community game, they couldn't care less about. And the sooner they get the contact out of it, the better.
I don't know. No, I think that's too simplistic a way to look at it.
They want basically less men's teams, more women's teams, a softer environment, less drinking, you know, less rowdiness. They want to change the game fundamentally from what it's been. It's such a convenient way to get it done. So that was my overriding thought after I thought it all through. I was like, yeah, this isn't that threatening to the game. It's not the existential threat that they make it out to be. But a lot like we're told in society about lots of existential threats, it's cover for some absolutely awful lawmaking.
Mm. Well, things we're talking about potential disasters. Did you see the front page of the rugby paper this week?
No, I have seen it. I seem to ignore it until you tell me about it.
I was going to suggest we just dovetail there briefly, and I was hoping, Phil, that you can make some sense of it, because we were talking last week about, and I think I opened the conversation about the RFU accounts for 22-23 by saying, that looks good. Is this what is actually going on? And now Francis Barron has come out and said, actually, in this current tax year we're in, which for the RFU will end in June 24, they are heading for a £50+ million loss.
Mm. Yeah.
And two very different figures there.
He also, so the accounts that just came out, which ended 30th of June 2023, the RFU showed a £4 million profit, although before their rugby investment, it was £103 million profit.
Yeah,
but the rugby investment included running all of the rugby. Now Francis Barron appears to be saying that they were massaging the figures, so that should actually, that 4 million profit should have actually been a 6 million loss.
Yeah, quote, deliberate obfuscation.
Yes.
So yeah,
and then now it's not entirely clear to me whether it was the RFU's projection or Francis Barron's projection. But he is suggesting that there is going to be, the year that we're in, the year that ends in 30th of June 2024, so in about 6 months' time, 7 months' time, a £59 million loss. But that's, so the rugby is fairly predictable, because you know how many games you're going to play, you know how many teams you're running, you know what competitions you're going to. It does seem to be too wild a swing. And I know this year is a World Cup year, therefore keeping that full team, keeping 50 bodies in France for a two-month period will be quite expensive. Is it £60 million? No, it's not. So I'm not entirely certain of that. And also, it's not clear to me how much will be expended, if anything, on the clubs going bankrupt, which some of, obviously, the majority of that actually happened in the last financial year, so not even in this financial year, but there may well be consequences for that in this financial year.
Yeah, one thing that he did say, which appears to be like factual in terms of the, as he said, obfuscation, is the fact that the RFU were saying, yay, we got a £4 million profit, and they didn't mention that they got a £5.5 million one-off grant from Sport England.
Whoops.
But, okay, so that would indicate the
why
underlying...
Why are we having grants from Sport England?
Sorry?
Why do we have... I mean, why does the government need to pay any money to rugby whatsoever? It makes no sense to me.
It shouldn't. But
it should it?
No.
Like, we should have no government money.
As I say, we're sort of joking about the government-funded sport. It should stand on its own 2 feet.
Because what do we have to do to get this money? Like, what hoops do we have to jump through? I'd hate to know what the strings are attached to it. Be carbon neutral by next year or something ridiculous. Or demonstrate sustainability.
Well, DEI, no doubt.
I mean, Australia would probably look at England and go, you've got nothing to worry about. To see Marky Mark.
Yeah.
Mark Nwanganitawase is leaving to go to rugby league.
Yes.
Well, just buy him back an inflated cost.
Five times cost.
They've already done it, but not him. They've bought Joseph Sualii, who's a young Samoan guy, 20 years of age, described as a teen prodigy, but... he's got a long way to go to be the finished article. He does look very good. Let's be clear. 6 foot five, rapid fullback.
Hang on, didn't they not used to have a 6 foot five rapid fullback?
They did.
From rugby league. Wasn't he really good?
But they've basically spent nearly three times as much money as Mark Nwanganitawase would have cost them to get this young guy across.
A guy
with caps who's bedded into the system. Oh, who's been playing rugby union. They're like, no, we'll spend three times as much on a kid, and we'll lose Marky Mack as a result. And also, we're buying back three players that we're relatively okay with, and we'll just ignore the fact we haven't got any props.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, they can't really buy props in from rugby league.
No, fair,
but
no, that's fair.
Give it a go. You get David Young used to play for. Dan Young used to play for. Was it Wigan?
He played for Salford. I had a Salford season ticket when he was playing for Salford.
So
he had another Welsh prop as well. They used to actually, Salford, no one liked Salford at that time because Salford was just about the only team that would compete in the scrum because they had legit Welsh props.
Interesting.
So all the other teams who were used to not pushing hated coming to Salford.
I've seen pushing in the scrum once. It was Wakefield.
To the Willows.
What was the thing I was about to say to you then, Tim? It was about...
Mark.
I'm hoping that they've vetted the religious views of this Samoan 6'5" fullback prodigy, because it's a lot of money to waste if you haven't.
Well, he'll be with them for 3 years, or 4 years, well, basically till the next World Cup, and then he'll go back to rugby league, a very wealthy man.
Mm. Good for him. Well done, you. Well done, young man.
Yes, absolutely.
Same as the cleaners.
Meanwhile, other player news is Joe Thuckenesinger is on Gloucester's shopping list. That's what I would address if I were Gloucester.
That is the most bizarre headline I've ever...
Well, Lewis Rees-Sammett is probably going to leave at the end of next season.
But you can't really replace light with light.
Or is it the end of the season? Oh, no, it's the end of the season.
Where's he going to go?
Lewis Rees-Sammett's in the last year of his contract.
He'll have to go to Wales, won't he?
How many caps has he got? God, no.
He'll be over his cap limit, surely. 20 caps.
20? Is it 25?
Oh, it's only 20. Okay, yeah, he'll be over that.
So he'll go to France.
He will.
He'll go to Bath.
Matteo Carreras
going to my beloved Bayonne.
Hang on. I am on something. So, Thuckenesinger goes, he's on a lot of cash. They have a lot of cash anyway, because they're trying to get Arundel. Arundel's not signed.
Yep.
So why not go for Rees-Sammett? Straight swap.
Oh, nice.
That makes sense. That actually does make sense.
It does make sense.
They could do that.
It does make sense. on Arundel, that does mean the fact that he's apparently, hasn't been confirmed, but will be in the next couple of days, we believe, maybe even by the time this podcast, you're listening to this podcast, but Arundel's going to confirm that he will be at Racing 92 next year, which will mean he cannot play for England in this year's Six Nations.
Mm. What if he just delays that decision?
Yeah, because it's only because he's there right now because of the emergency circumstance or whatever, the exceptional circumstances. So surely it would only be once this contract ends.
No, if he signs a new deal, that will supersede his current deal. And so
just don't sign it until after the Six Nations.
Yeah, just get 60 grand from the RFU and then sign it the day after.
Or maybe Racing say you've got to sign it now or not at all. Who knows?
Well, you don't have to tell anyone that you've signed anything. I mean, you can sign it now for Racing. Yeah, why would you have to? Isn't their business?
Lewis Rees-Sommit. So I think he should go to France. He should earn mega money and be paid as one of the best players in the world, which he is. Can you name any Welsh players who've gone to France and it's actually been successful?
Yes. No. Arguably, Gareth Thomas.
Toulouse. Yeah.
Yeah, arguably. Yeah,
that's a good shout, I'd say.
Stephen Jones was successful at Clermont, I would say.
But generally speaking, you're right. Gareth Davis didn't like it. Reece Webb didn't like it. Lee Halfpenny didn't like it.
Bigger pulled his back two games in.
You've got Lydia, who hated it.
Yeah.
Charteris might have done better. I can't really remember.
Yeah.
Charteris did okay.
Was he at Racing for a while?
Racing, and also he went to one before that, which got relegated.
Yeah,
so not that well then, I guess. If you get relegated,
who are they? Blood and Gold, the really famous.
Sorry,
Perpignan. He went to Perpignan. Mike Phillips, notoriously awful in France.
Jamie Roberts, he's a bit more cosmopolitan, isn't he?
Yeah, he doesn't seem to do well anywhere. I'm being honest. I mean, he did okay for Harlequins for a little while. He was okay. He didn't make any real impact in Waratahs.
He's the true definition of a test match animal.
Yeah, he is.
Like,
way better on an international pitch than he is on a club pitch.
Yes.
There must be one who has been...
Gethin Jenkins went to Toulon for a bit, didn't he?
Definitely didn't work.
No.
The one who might have worked is Jonathan Davis at Clermont. He actually did all right.
Yeah.
Does Regan King have a Welsh cap?
Maybe for the rugby league team.
Oh, that's another guy.
Is he the young lad at?
Oh no, sorry,
the young lad at
Regan
Racing.
Grace.
No, you're thinking of Regan Grace.
Is he the young lad at Racing?
No, Regan King has played for Scarlets and was just a magnificent player.
Who's the young lad that is like?
Is he Regan King?
You got the right guy.
So Regan King was the Kiwi.
Is that Regan Grace?
Yeah.
Yeah, Regan Grace.
Regan King is the Kiwi who went to Wales.
Regan Grace is who Christian Wade got brought in as a
medical
joker for him.
And I think
Regan Grace was from St Helens, but he was Welsh rugby league.
Correct.
Player. He might be training with Bath now.
Hmm.
I seem to think he's training with Bath. Mm. Look that up.
And I've just seen here in the same page of the rugby paper that's saying that Joe Thockenessing is a target for Gloucester, position they really need. And historically, when Gloucester were great, that's what you think about. It was all the wingers they had, not the horrible front five that were nasty that they could do with. Anyway.
Yeah, Johan van Graan confirms injured rugby league star Regan Grace is working with Bath Rugby.
Like it.
Rehabbing from a serious Achilles injury.
You'll like this. Former Salem Worcester director of rugby Steve Diamond is waiting in the wings with pressure mounting on Gloucester boss George Skivington.
Ooh. Mm. I wonder if Steve Diamond is leaking that story.
Yeah, I was going to say. It says, the Cherry and White is at 8 points clear. Well, read the last paragraph here. The Cherry and White is at 8 points clear of Newcastle Falcons, and Diamond, according to blindside sources, is itching to get back into the coaching and would relish the challenge of turning Gloucester around.
He would work there.
That is 100% a Diamond press release.
I'd take him. Do you know, no, I wouldn't in this case. I do still believe George Skivington is the right man for the job.
I really like Skivington.
Yeah.
I really do.
There's no... You have to be in a very bad place, like Bath were under Hooper, to throw everything out. And I don't think Skivington's bad in any way.
He's not, but he hasn't addressed the issues their pack has just suddenly got really depowered. They're just not what they were.
No, they're not.
They were formidable, and now they've just...
And they had that one weird trick at the line-out, which was scoring them loads
and
of
And as soon
tries.
As that's been stopped, they've kind of not had that edge.
And also, Jack Singleton's gone to Toulon.
Toulon, started for Toulon.
Yeah, so that's another thing. So there's two things about the Singleton...
Well, they've got McGuigan and the other young lad coming through, so that's not too much of an issue.
No, but do you know what I thought about it? It reminded me of last year with Newcastle letting Trevor Davison go. In fact, they let a fair few players go, I think, in the middle of the season. And I wonder if we're going to see more of this because of a tighter salary cap and the ring fence league.
Well, yeah, do you know about the Dave Atwood all of a sudden went to Toulon.
Oh, yeah. So we get him off the salary cap, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But in this case, what I think is happening is because of the ring fence league and there's no chance of you getting relegated, if you've got a fringe player who's like just not playing much, it's best to get rid of him. So I heard the example the other day, and this is a really interesting thing. A club had a very expensive player, and he was leaving at the end of the year. So they're looking at this guy and thinking, right, if he goes to France, he's definitely leaving, right? And they're going to release him from his contract, like say a year early, something like that. So if he goes to France and he doesn't pass his medical, we're going to have to set this boy back on his massive wage for a year, and we don't want him. So actually, every game he plays now is a massive financial risk to us. And I wonder if there's something in that with Singleton. So there's no relegation, therefore you strip your squad of all unnecessary costs. Because what's the point? You're not going to compete. You're not going to get to the playoffs. So send away the lads now, and you know, think about rebuilding with some kids, and just think about saving some money. Mm. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, and there's different ways this has worked. Because for some clubs, it will just be about jettison players, as in to save money, to attempt to break even. For other clubs have done this in order to avoid the salary cap police.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like Charlie Yules went to play in South Africa for a few months.
Yeah.
And other... Bristol did it with Dan Thomas when they thought they had a shot of getting Jack Willis or one of the Willis boys when Wasps went bump. So... teams have used it to suit their purposes, but Gloucester does feel a bit more Newcastle-esque than Bath-esque.
Yeah, 100%. So that's what I thought on that. As for their pack, they've always been quite good at like storing up good good ball carriers. So like 6 foot two to 6 foot four kind of back row ball carrier. So you had Ben Morgan, you had Ackerman, you had
Paledry.
Paledry's a great one.
Now they've got Clement and...
Clement can play as well.
Mm. I do like Clement. He's a young English lad who could, maybe in a couple of years, be pushing for a bit more experience, a bit more size, could be pushing.
But that's just sort of faded away now. But
when they had Groblar and Mostert and...
Groblar was ace. And the other thing as well for Gloss, it's happened to them in two different iterations.
And
of
Slater.
Slater, yeah.
Hero.
Well, two different iterations of this Gloucester team have basically had the same problem happen to them. They've stayed too static in what they do. So under Danny Cipriani, you knew exactly what they were going to do. Like they were so predictable. And for the first year, it was ace because you had no idea. But as soon as you worked it out, it's like, pod of three out the back. Yeah, dull. And I think
Cipriani hid it on the wing in defence again.
Yeah. And I think this version of Gloucester has been found out now, which is they're very good at line out. You stop the line out, now what they got? They've got a few ball carriers. But they don't look... Yeah, they don't look tremendous. They need to find a different way to win.
Speaking of Gloucester, did you see anything from their trip to...
Black Lion.
No. To Georgia.
So they won, but that was it. Five kicks.
Yeah, it was... the only try of the game was scored by Black Lion. It was
really?
One try to nil.
Who was the team?
Mixed.
Adza and Edza.
Oh, really?
Villy.
What experience that is.
Yeah. Hell of an experience.
Yeah.
It was a young team.
Gloucester. The Challenge Cup is, like the Champions Cup, so the Challenge Cup, there are 18 clubs in it, and 12 of them go through to the round of 16.
Black Lion going to go through, do we think?
No, probably not. But that just means that, I don't know, just going back to the Champions Cup, this year's format is better than last year. I will give credit where it is due. the four pools works better than the two pools, and playing people in your, only playing people in your pool.
You only play your pool, and you play the four teams from the other competitions,
which is nice.
So, but you don't get the home and so you don't get the grudge match where Quinns will not host Racing, so Racing can get their own back.
No,
Exeter will not host Toulon, so they can get their own back.
Yeah, and we talked about the hypocrisy of player welfare. Let's play loads more games. So there's 27. Oh, no, hold on. How many pool games are there? So there's 24 teams in it, isn't there? So
there's only you only play four.
There's 12 games every round. So there's 12, 24, 36. There's 48 matches to eliminate eight teams.
Yes. Is the round of 16, is it home and away?
No.
Or it's just, straight knockout? So yeah, that you're cutting down.
Yeah.
I think this is probably the least worst option.
Agreed. The least worst, the best option is probably just going back to 20 teams and doing it like it was.
Yeah.
With the only eight qualify for quarterfinals, and there's no round of 16. As good as a round of 16
round of 16 will be good fun.
The two-legged game was probably the best thing that they had.
Some of those were amazing.
Yeah, they were really, really good. Yeah.
Did you get that grudge as well?
Well, it was always around this time of year, wasn't it? It was just in the new year, the rounds three and four, the home and away. Is that what you're talking about? You're talking about the home and away quarterfinal?
Yeah, yeah.
The home and away. Yeah,
so home and away.
Was it round 16? No, it was just after the... Just after, wasn't it? Because you'd always have...
2 years ago, they had a home and away quarterfinal. Last year, they had the round of 16. Straight knockout, I think.
Yeah, two years ago.
Or was it last year, round of 16, and the home and away was the quarterfinal?
Oh, I can't even remember. The format has changed so many times.
Yeah. So, Bristol played one of their favourite sons, ex-sons.
Yes.
This weekend.
Semi. And he scored. And he celebrated.
Did he?
He did celebrate when he scored, which I think he was in front of the ball. If you've seen the try, he picked up from the back of a ruck, or from the side of the ruck, or the front of a ruck, went under the post.
He was celebrating to divert.
Yes.
From don't look at that.
Don't replay that.
Don't look confident. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't replay that.
I maintain he will go down in history as the Premiership's most overrated player. From day one.
That first year of him, he was
average.
Unplayable.
He was average.
He was unplayable.
I thought, this guy's knocking the ball on quite a lot. And then you get a try and then knock on the ball.
You're joking. Like, the number of times from set piece, like, the ball would go from Harry Randall to Semi Randrandra.
He
would score.
No, he does
things. How no other player could do that?
No. He does things like, he throws the ball backwards over his head.
Yeah.
Like, hey, and it dribbles into touch. And the commentators go... That was just spectacular. If someone was on his wavelength, well, you know, based on that, you can throw the ball anywhere.
He was the definition. He was that good in that first year for Bristol. He was that good that Bristol finished top of the table, and a massive part of that was because he opened up. And Piers O'Connor looked like a player that we were Piers O'Connor looked like a player that we were rightly saying should play for England.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was next to Semi Randrandra. No. Semi Randrandra made Piers O'Connor look like an England player.
I'd say it's the other way around. Piers O'Connor. In fact, Piers O'Connor actually made Semi Randrandra look bad because Piers O'Connor could catch a ball. Like, he doesn't make mistakes. And then the World Cup just really finished off for me when he drops the ball against Wales. Just needs to walk it in. He's a winger. Just needs to walk it in. Of course, just a tremendous talent. Tremendous talent.
I think he's a phenomenal talent.
I don't know how you watch it. You guys are like Griff Nation watching Sia Khaleesi.
The bit... So you flip with Semi. Sometimes you say he's terrible. Sometimes you say he's average. And sometimes you say he's not worth the money. And on the last
Definitely not worth the money.
Yeah, on the last one, I completely agree.
I completely agree.
Because I don't think any player... But particularly when you've got other marquee, I don't think any players.
It is relative when it's a marquee and when it's Steve Lansdowne's kid's inheritance. Yeah. It's a relative factor.
Who is worth the money though? Who was worth the money from the day he signed? I never thought he would be.
Sir Charles
was worth.
He was injured a lot.
He was injured
first year. Now his. First
I know that because I picked him in fantasy rugby every single season, basically.
Well, his first year was dynamite.
And Luatua probably not far off the money. Although he has had a few injuries.
Still only 28, him.
No, he's not.
He's tough paper around that.
There's
guy,
no man. Way he's only 28. There's no way.
He's not 28,
no,
mate.
He can't be.
He's 34.
Yeah.
I reckon he might be flat 30. I don't think he's any older than that. Let's have a look. Stephen Luatua is... Oh, he's 32.
32,
yeah.
But he looks 42.
Where's the time gone? He looks 42, yeah.
Do you know who's younger than I thought? Who was playing today? Who went off injured? Joe Launchbury.
Oh, okay.
Do you know how old he is?
31.
32.
32.
Yeah, I've had him that he'd be 34, 35.
Now, he's a guy that could be the answer to England's six by playing him at second row.
Yeah, to create room for Murrow. Although he did... He went off with an awkward-looking shoulder injury.
He does. And he doesn't have shoulders as well. No. Yes. That's impressive.
Even more awkward.
He's great. I hope he's well soon.
He's 6 foot six and 130 kilos, so that always helps.
It does help, and he works hard. I have nothing that I'll say about Bristol, because I didn't see it. Did anyone see the Bristol game?
No, it was a...
I saw the highlights, and I was following the score, the backwards and forwards.
Yeah, I thought they'd just completely shat the bed.
Yeah,
they were,
25 points up with... 20 minutes to go.
And then lost the lead, only to get it back with a drop goal at the end.
In the 84th minute.
Callum Sheedy's probably just sealed himself a starting spot in the Six Nations with that moment. Wales don't have any other options, and he looks decent. So.
Yeah.
No, they don't, do they?
Oh, we haven't mentioned the Bulls handing it to Saracens.
Yeah.
They look pretty good.
Yeah, the only team that I said from England that would win, they got smashed.
They lost.
Absolutely smashed. I didn't see it. Did anyone else see it?
I saw bits of
highlights
this.
Again.
Saracens got. Yeah, they did deserve to lose. They probably the scoreline flattered them ever so slightly in the end. Billy Vunipola just a brain dead moment with a yellow card. They had a couple of yellow cards.
Yeah, two. So they had Goud, Itoji, and then they played the last 30 minutes without.
Christ,
Billy.
They weren't messing around with this team either, were they?
No, when no. Theo McFarlane was on the bench.
It was a very strong team. I mean, they're missing a couple of players through injury. Lewington, who's out long term, Ben Earl. But other than that,
that back three for the Bulls were great. Arendse, Moody, and Vili Leroux.
Yeah,
it's good, isn't it?
Johannessen was just really controlling at fly half.
Yeah,
has he rediscovered his form after running a farm for 5 years?
Akka van der Merwe and Marco van Staden were really good.
Imagine how much money that guy's lost.
And that the ones I was looking at The two props for the Bulls are ones that are on the way into the South Africa setup. And Wilco Lowe, formerly of Quins, and Steenkamp, he looks like a really good young loosehead prop.
Oh, yeah, it's a different Steenkamp.
Well, I think I'm assuming it's his kid. Prop with a surname Steenkamp. Guthrow must be about old enough to have like a 22 year old kid.
Maybe.
Don't know, might be no relation whatsoever.
Yeah, he's not. So Gerhard Steenkamp, certainly his Wikipedia page doesn't.
Yeah, you'd think it would mention it if his dad was Guthrow.
Yeah, he's, according to his Wikipedia page, 128 kilos and 6 foot four and a half.
So that's useful,
isn't it? 194.
He gave Alex Clary a bit of a going over.
That does not surprise me one bit.
And Jake White, after the game, apologised for the crowd booing Owen Farrell vociferously.
Oh, grow up, everyone. It's not the end of the world.
Well, they did go for him big
good.
Time.
Good. Get him. Christ, this is a team of names, this Bulls team.
Bulls and Saracens team. It's a strong Saracens team, but Bulls.
How is Johan Goosen that ended up in this situation? I don't know how much he gets paid at the Bulls, and I hope it's handsomely. But he fell out with somebody over not being he was the highest paid player in France, but he wasn't the highest enough paid player in France, which is why he left and didn't play a game again for like 3 years. Did he get to Cheetahs in the end?
He went all over in that.
Like, what was wrong with the man?
Well, he just wanted to be the commercial manager for a large cattle farm.
It makes sense, yeah. He was he at Racing? And then they were like, we're just not going to pay you quite as much as Montpellier.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous numbers, and he decided to do that.
It was ridiculous.
We got emailed from someone who was at that game. Stefanotto, contactedchasers@gmail.com. And he sent us a picture of Owen Farrell taking a photo with his kids and just said that he felt quite bad for him with the stick that he was getting from the crowd. Mentioned Jake White apologising for the booing, which I didn't know until I read that email. And just said, actually, what a lovely bloke he was.
Mm. And I think Farrell, he'll just be water off a duck's back.
Yeah.
The booing, he'll just laugh it off.
I nearly gave Owen Farrell a lift into Manchester once. That was my claim to fame.
Nearly.
Oh, I'd love... Oh, my God. Can you imagine the conversation?
Is that when you were in your Fiat 500?
Yeah, why couldn't I do it? Was I in like...
You were in your Volvo, weren't you?
It was... It seems it was car seats.
So hold on. So you offered, he was going to, and then you had to say, no, I've got car seats.
Yeah, it was him, Maitland, and somebody else. And we just... And they went for sex. Boys, I'm going to tell now. Do you want to jump in? And they went, yeah, sure. Who I was talking to someone who knows him. Who was the Saracens guy that I knew at the time?
Great mates.
No, I knew Maitland, but it was somebody else that I knew and I was talking to on, I can't remember who it was. And I went, oh, do you want to jump in? Went, oh, yeah, sure. So went to my car and we had a car seat. So I looked at the logistics. I was like, oh, fuck. Yeah, couldn't be done. So they jumped in an Uber.
Oh, that could be a sliding doors moment in your life. Who knows?
Yeah, quite.
I reckon I'm just thinking, if you'd have had Owen Farrell in your car, that would have completely changed the dynamic of the podcast over the last few years.
Owen Farrell
would have been your mate. What a guy! What a bloke!
Got his number.
Because you do the more you get to know these players, the more you like them and become incredibly defensive of them.
It's dangerous getting to know them if you want to take
the
shots
animals
at them.
Names.
We don't give the cattle names,
which is again why Austin Healey is so good, because he'll say exactly what he thinks. And whereas you can see some people are holding back because they know these people.
A lot of players go to Austin Healey for not quite coaching or analysis, but his opinions on a frequent basis. A lot of the fly halves do.
We should touch on the biggest game, at least on paper, because it was repeated the final.
Oh, Leinster La Rochelle, how have we not talked about that? Oh, because it was a horrendous conditions.
It was horrendous conditions.
Good win for Leinster.
Well, was it? I mean, it's very typical.
Any win for Leinster's good.
Yeah, it was a win that they got, and unless it's the final, who cares?
It was a good win. It was definitely a good win to go to La Rochelle and to match them physically, which they did. And to get the win. But you're right, it only mattered. It kind of felt, towards the end of that game, it felt like when Ireland beat South Africa in the group stages of the World
Cup. Yes, I agree.
It just had that feeling that it's wonderful, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And it is of no consequence.
Interesting selections for Leinster. I think like Kieran Frawley would have been disappointed not to be starting and then came on and...
Who is he?
...knocked over the winning points.
Who's Kieran Frawley?
Kieran Frawley's Ireland squad member.
Interesting.
15, 10. Harry Byrne started at 10, but Frawley came on in the first half and then knocked over the winning points. And Josh van der Fleer started on the bench with Will Connors starting at 7. Which is, that's quite a big statement and tells you where Josh van der Fleer is at. He's not the player he was a couple of years ago.
I don't know. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see that, because I think he's
he's fantastic.
Played well in the World Cup.
It's relative. Josh van der Fleer not being as good as he was a couple of years ago, the best player in the world.
Yes,
not a huge criticism. But
Ryan Baird started at 6 as well.
Yeah,
he is a talented boy.
And Charlie Knighty, All Black Charlie Knighty on the bench.
Yep.
Not bad.
Are you looking at Ultimate Rugby? Did it get that right?
Hang on.
It's Bods.
He was on the bench.
He was on the... No, he was number 23. That's what I'm saying. Wow. Ultimate Rugby got it right.
One player.
It's unusual.
Of 46.
Here's
correct.
A guy that I thought of when he scored his try. Jordan Lama. He was going to be one of the great players in the world at one point.
Yeah,
that was
the
sort of route he was taking. Why is he not the best player in the world now? Is there a reason for this?
He's very good. He has some defensive deficiencies, and other players have come through and been better.
Incredible, wasn't it? But he was meant to be like the best attacking, and actually, arguably, for Ireland and for Leinster for about 6 months.
Project players is what happened to Jordan Lama.
Yeah,
although Mac Hansen's actually Irish. Or his mum was half Irish.
Yeah. Like, he was born and raised in Australia.
But he didn't have to wait to qualify to play for Ireland, whereas James Lowe was, let's get James Lowe over, sit him in our team for 3 years, and then he can play for us.
Yes.
And that's just before it goes to 5 years.
Yes.
It just surprised me because, that is the case, actually, with James Lowe. But Jordan Lama was a devastating player. Absolutely devastating. And he just hasn't really fulfilled his potential.
Yeah, I think that is half of it. He's not. Well, he had enormous potential.
Again, the way that we talk about it many times, the way we sometimes over we inflate how good young people are because you map on how good they could be if they continue at this same
trajectory. Oh, I'm no fan of young people, Tim. You misunderstand me.
But yeah, good win for Leinster. But again, as you say, if that were the old 20-team Champions Cup, that would be a devastating loss for La Rochelle, as it is.
Yeah, at home.
At home, defeat, they're really under pressure to make the knockouts. And if they make the knockouts, they might not have a preferable position. They might have a tough quarter-final match. As it is, La Rochelle lost. No worries. They'll be in the last 16.
There's a glorious moment. I'd love to know what was said between the two. But Weenie Antonio grabs Gibson Park. I can't remember why he grabs him. Like, it was like a quick penalty tap or something. But he scragged him like he was a small child and then pulled him close to him. And he said something to him and Gibson Park laughs his head off and he laughs as well. I'd love to know what it was.
Something about having made tons of cash playing for other countries despite being Kiwis.
Yeah. I can't remember. But it looked like, I don't know, there's definitely a little and large size gag going on there.
Yeah.
There was a few fracas. My favourite one was the one in the Munster Bayonne game, Tim, did you see someone from the crowd?
Oh yes,
pulled back one of the Bayonne second rows, which is not the first time that a Munster fan, has wanted to get involved with one of the players.
I thought this as well.
The guy wearing deck shoes, boat shoes, and
That was
Gino
a Munster
shorts.
Fan, wasn't it?
That was Munster. Yeah.
That was Munster fan.
Munster fan.
But it was Ulster was the game when Trevor Brennan went into the crowd and punched someone.
Yes, that is.
And got his ban.
Yeah. And there was one. Whose dad was it? Was it Pickermall's dad? Was it Harry Nordicke's dad?
Harry Nordicke's dad.
Was it Harry Nordicke's dad? Yes.
Harry Nordicke, definitely.
Yes.
Anyway. Munster do have this habit. I mean, they're very passionate fans, but they do have some absolute idiots in that crowd. Holding back a barrel.
All clubs. Like you put 10,000 plus people.
Oh, I mean, Ravenhill is just such a great place to watch a game of rugby. Oh, by the way, when you were upstairs sorting your apple disaster, which
we are going to taste afterwards.
We mentioned 27th of January, Racing v Toulouse.
I don't know if I can make it. Let's just have a look.
All you have to do is get to Paris. Lewis has taken care of everything else.
Of course he has. Good boy.
Okay. Yeah, I'm there. 100%.
Yeah, okay. I'm in.
Yes.
27th.
So I'm going to go Friday to Monday.
Cool. I'll probably do Friday to Sunday.
Yeah. So I can either pod down the line or we can pod from Paris at a cafe.
Pod from Paris. We'll try and get a late train or flight back.
Hang on a minute.
You haven't got a CrossFit comp, have you?
Oh, no. My wife is skiing.
With the kids?
Kids have got to learn to fend for themselves at some point.
Yeah, they do.
Sorry, Claire will take him.
Paris be who?
Claire will have Hannah, Thomas and your two.
Four kids.
Who are we watching? Paris?
It's Racing v Toulouse.
That does excite me.
In the Thunderdome.
I'm definitely there.
Okay.
I think there might be...
Yeah, you sold it to me now.
I think there might be special tickets as well. I don't know, but I think there might be special... I think there might be extras on the tickets.
And we are also going to Lisbon?
Well, we are going somewhere, which if you listen to the Patreon pod, we are going to go, and I'm going to try and book this in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, cool.
Because my work decreases next Friday for the end of the year. So somewhere, possibly Lisbon, on the 2nd and 3rd of March.
Exciting stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if you listened to Patreon a few weeks ago, you would have had a little bit about that. So that would be quite exciting.
Excellent.
If it plays out how I think it will play out, that would be a fantastic place to be on the 2nd and 3rd of March.
Oh, wow. Right, and I've also found out the big result that I mentioned at the start. It was a win for Basildon away at Canvey Island.
Oh, huge.
Massive. Absolutely massive. Aylesbury, do we know it? The Aylesbury score? Narrow loss?
Oh, I don't know. But did you see where Sedgley went?
No.
This week. He travelled down to Plymouth.
Ooh, Albion.
The second team's...
Phil Largan's Sedgley against Dan Mugford's Albion.
Yep. Ryan Lamb's.
Ryan Lamb.
Chris Bentley's Albion. It's 22-3 to Albion.
Ooh, that's Plymouth. A big win.
Yeah, big
Where
win.
Where are Albion in the table? Because I thought
they weren't doing that well.
But I don't. They might do all right. Do you know they only run a first team? There's no second team at Albion.
You have told me that. Yeah,
it's crazy.
Well, interesting thing for Sedgley. So the second team game got called off at about 10 a.m., maybe 9 a.m. And the second team captain went via public transport from Sedgley, from Whitefield to Plymouth, trying to catch the game.
Did he make it?
He made the second half.
Well done.
Absolutely remarkable.
Wow, that's a great effort.
Because he wanted to be on the coach journey back. He wanted to be on the booze bus back.
Oh, what a boy.
So fair play.
Well, fair play.
Is awesome.
My boys, Marlo, they were beaten this weekend by a team which I can't believe you've never mentioned before, and I've never heard of this team before.
Old Haberdashians.
No. HACRFC.
Yeah,
Honourable Artillery Company.
Yeah.
Because which... Saracens have played games there, haven't they? Or teams have played games there.
I was invited to watch Scholars versus Wigan Warriors there in a pre-season a few years ago by their GM, who is a lovely man, who's since moved on, actually, a guy called Jack. And it's a very cool place to watch rugby. Wasps used to do loads of stuff there when they were in London.
Mm. They train on a Wednesday night and a Saturday morning for an hour. They train in Clapham Common Southside on a Saturday morning. I don't know if that's like a social thing or whether, but that's cool. Anyway, so I'm quite happy that I don't mind the Marlow boys getting beaten by that team.
On Aylesbury?
I don't know about Aylesbury. I'll just look it up. We can't complete the podcast without finding that result out.
I've got a feeling it's not good because I've not had a text message this week.
Mm. We should also do fixtures for next week.
Yep.
And then...
Yeah, go on, Phil.
I want to go home. So we've got Friday night, Tim.
Stop.
Aylesbury News.
Fullerians 25, Aylesbury 3.
Oh, no. Wheels are off.
Leaving Aylesbury 10th out of 12.
Oh.
And that was the team below them that they lost to.
No.
Yes.
Gutted.
Yeah.
Ah, this is worrying.
Go on, Phil.
Right. Friday night, Tim's beloved Bayonne host Glasgow Warriors.
Yeah.
Northampton Saints host Toulon, which Toulon need a win.
I'm going to say home win, home win.
Yeah. Give me two home wins.
I can't believe Toulon
will be... God, Olivon. Just watching that game, Olivon is...
What a man.
Specimen.
Just what a... Yeah, it's what a human he's and rugby
absolutely
player.
Enormous as well. And he's athletic.
Yeah.
Oh, and handsome.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He's the full package.
I do worry that Toulon are going to win that against Saints. Then on the Saturday, we've got 2 1 o'clock kickoffs. In Pool 1, Saracens host Connacht.
Home win.
Home win. And in Pool 4, Stormers host La Rochelle. That might not go all La Rochelle's way.
I know.
Tough to travel.
Stormers will put out a first choice team, you'd think, in that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
it will
wow.
be very different conditions to the last La Rochelle game. It will be 30 degree heat.
Wow,
in Cape
Town. That's big, that game.
It is, and that it's tough. La Rochelle need a win.
Okay, I could potentially see all home wins so far, but then I thought all the English teams would probably get beaten.
So what do we know?
Yeah.
Then we've got a 3:15 in Pool 1, which is my beloved Bordeaux, who are going to smash Bristol.
Yeah.
Grind them into dust. Then we've got the 5:30s, which is Lyon hosting the Bulls. Lyon need a win, and that's a good matchup.
I'd suggest Bulls won't travel with a strong team now they've got the win under their belt at home, so I'm going to go Lyon.
Probably.
And I reckon Leinster will beat Sale.
Leinster hosting Sale. You're not jumping on a little 45-minute flight over to Dublin, JB?
I am not, no. No, I would like to watch that, though.
I think that will be a big Leinster win, unfortunately.
Away win for the late kickoff.
Then we've got, well, there's going to be one home win in the
hopefully
kickoff.
For you,
so there's
Phil.
Cardiff host Bath, which Bath are going to get their second win, and Ulster against Racing 92. Two teams both desperate for wins. Stuart Lancaster coming back up to the Kingspan, smash him.
The loser of that could be in trouble with the other teams that are in the that are in the pool.
Mm. Although, yeah, Ulster will get a win over Cardiff. Hopefully.
Oh yeah, they play Cardiff. Yeah, okay.
Oh no, they don't because they're both URC.
URC. So Racing gets to play Cardiff, Ulster don't.
Yeah.
Ulster get Toulouse. And Toulouse, Racing, Bath.
And Ulster gets Toulouse and Harlequins.
And Harlequins.
It might not be a good year for Ulster.
No.
Ulster might be 0-4.
I wonder if things go back to how we thought they would go this week.
Possibly. revert to the mean.
Exeter Munster's interesting.
The 1 o'clock on Sunday.
Harlequins to lose. Yeah,
Exeter Munster's got a bit of history as
it
well.
It does. I was thinking that. That's a tasty game.
Yeah. Yeah, Quins probably can't beat Toulouse. Tigers can beat Stade Francais, though. Stade Francais, who rested all of their players for this week. So Stade Francais have put all of their eggs in the round two basket.
Hmm. I'm going to wait and see the teams, but it looks very homey this week, except for a few.
Yeah, Toulouse away, possibly Racing away, sadly.
Maybe Munster away.
Munster, possibly.
Possibly.
Yeah, Bath away, definitely. Bulls, depending on what team they put out.
Yeah.
Bath will be sitting pretty.
It's all on the teams, isn't it? Oh, interesting. Right, nearly 2 hours. I think we must be done. Any other business? Just like people have got a little bit of downtime coming up over the next few weeks. Anything you've watched recently that you recommend or read?
Is there something...
Have you watched The Bear?
No, what's it about?
Watch The Bear.
Cooking.
Really cool.
Cooking program.
Takes a little bit to get into, but it's so good.
Oh, really?
Is it on Disney? Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think it might be, actually. But it's very good.
I just completed 3 hours on the history of Visa. That was quite interesting.
History of Visa?
On Acquired.
Nice.
Do you know what I was listening to was Oak Island. Have you ever heard of Oak Island?
No.
Oak Island is just in Nova Scotia in Canada. And there's this little island which is a mile long, half a mile wide. And it was two islands and then kind of they were connected and... Anyway, there was always been speculation about this. There's elements that date back to the Knights Templars, mm-hmm. and there's lots of apparent treasure to the point that there was all these different. If you look down through the history, there's all these different drilling companies that have acquired the rights to drill on Oak Island, and they've never managed to find whatever is there. And this, they've gone down hundreds of feet and they've found like a layer of wood. And then they've gone through that and there's been a layer of coconut shells, something else, something else. And then they get a layer of this. And then they keep going down and finding new things. And then it gets flooded and it was like booby-trapped flooded. And there's networks of...
What on earth?
There's speculation. So the people have never managed to find the treasure that is apparently there, the fortune that is down there somewhere in this elaborate web of things. The thought is that there was a ship at some point deliberately sunk with everything in it and then... this thing constructed over the top. And there's loads of drilling companies that for the last 150 years have acquired the rights and tried to do it. Apparently Roosevelt was really, really into it when he became... But it's fascinating because you go into all this Knights Templar stuff and it might date back hundreds, thousands of years.
Good. In Canada, though?
Yeah.
Why were they there? I mean, America hadn't even been discovered.
Well, no, there's thoughts that pirates...
Or Vikings...
Interesting.
Yeah.
Unacquired. Mm-hmm. So I listened before the sad passing of Charlie Munger 2 weeks ago. I'd just listened to. There's three Acquired episodes on Berkshire Hathaway.
Yes.
And then there's a Charlie Munger episode, which I would recommend. Acquired's always brilliant. The three episodes, it's like 10 hours on.
I've not listened to
Berkshire Hathaway.
I did listen to the Charlie Munger interview, though.
Yeah. The three on Berkshire is better than the Munger interview.
Yeah.
And it's given me a new phrase that I love, I keep using at work, which is, never wrestle with a pig. You'll both get dirty, but the pig will enjoy it. Which is a Munger phrase.
Very good.
Yeah, like that.
Just to finish on that, Oak Island, I just looked it up. It says that the theories about artifacts present on the island range from pirate treasure to the Holy Grail, or the Ark of the Covenant, with the Grail and Ark having been buried there by the Knights Templar.
It sounds like a Dan Brown book.
It does, doesn't
so
it?
There is.
It was fascinating listening, anyway.
There's also the Nazi gold train. You know that story?
No.
So there is a train full of Nazi gold, which is somewhere in Poland, allegedly. And they found it. They thought they found it, like 2 years ago. It was all over the news. So the train is underground. It got buried. I mean, how many places you could bury an underground train, I do not know. Just follow the rails. I mean, that would be my advice. But, they thought they found it like 2 years ago. And there's so many.
You say that, but it's like the other thing. Sorry, we will go in a minute, Phil. If we're talking about this, we are done. But there's the other thing about the giant Neolithic structures in the Amazon that have never been uncovered.
Now, that is really interesting. Yeah, really interesting. Found by LADAR or whatnot.
Yeah, which suggests that despite scientists claiming that the human race is 15 to 20,000 years old, actually there's civilized human human beings is about however long, but it suggests that they date back tens and tens of thousands of years.
I just think it shows, doesn't it, no matter what the field is, experts know nowhere near as much as they say that they do.
I think we've all had enough of experts.
Yeah, we've absolutely had enough of them.
And they're invested in defending the position that they've established to be true.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah. So it's a story as old as time. It repeats itself over and over again. And just a last one on Berkshire Hathaway. Mm. If you want to just collect a load of quotes, going through the Charlie Munger quotes and the Warren Buffett quotes are phenomenal. Mm. They've got some absolute belters.
Yeah. It's those episodes.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
All the acquires are great, but those ones are really cool. Mm. And it's very apt at the moment.
So Charlie Munger is basically Warren Buffett's right-hand man. Warren Buffett has the ideas, from what I can tell, and Charlie Munger, I need a right-hand man.
You have the ideas, you need someone who can execute.
Yeah, constantly. Constantly. That's what I need. I just need rich enough to hire a Charlie Munger.
What you also need, what everyone needs to do as well, is listen in at least 1.5 speed so you can get more done. That's what I do.
Yes. Great.
Or listen in half speed and it'll sound like we're drunk. Whatever the case, thank you for listening. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. For more content, some of it spicy, then go to patreon.com/eggchasers. And our pre-Christmas show will be coming up next week after round 2 of the Champions Cup.
And we'll do a Patreon for next week as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Perfect.
Let the boys end.